Hi, I'm Korra.
I'm the Avatar. You gotta deal with it.
So you're like the Avatar or something. Big deal.
Who doesn't want a bison as their best friend?
You're the master of all the elements. You should know how to drive.
And then she does.
Does this mean I'm the master now?
Food for thought.
I've never had a girlfriend to hang out with and talk to before. I'll destroy you.
I filmed the whole thing if you want to watch it.
The Avatar thanks you for your loyal service.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I am joined by Mel.
Hello.
Allie.
Hi.
And Delaney.
Hello.
Today we'll be discussing The Coronation, the latest episode of The Korra Legend of Korra.
See, I can't not hear.
Coronation.
Coronation. I know.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Oh, it's killing me.
Episode 3 of Book 4.
It's Coronation Day.
There's just
thank you.
There's a lot to talk about this somewhat controversial episode. I don't know. I don't know if you guys think it's controversial. Maybe you'll think so after we're done with this.
I'm sure they do.
Anyway, podcast info stuff at the end of the podcast. For now, we're just going to get into it. Warning before we start. This might get heated in some aspects. There's going to be issues discussed here that are very important to a lot of people, me included. And I feel like they need to be fairly represented, and I'm the only one on here that's going to do this. So I'm going to be pretty firm and maybe a little harsh in this. But that's not the entire podcast. But I do think our main point of discussion will be how they represent Korra's recovery in this episode. I think that's the biggest talking point after this, and it's the most controversial part of the episode. That being
said,
this
podcast will be our most aggressive one ever.
You might say that, yeah.
One might say.
That being said, that is the B-plot of the episode. There is a lot to discuss otherwise. So let's start positive.
Oh, yeah, it is the B-plot.
It is the B-plot, yeah. So let's start positive here. So we're going to go around the horn. Give us your thoughts on the episode. So here's what I want. Did you think the episode was good, bad, in general? And two, give me the thing you liked most about it. Let's do that to start. Let's start with Mel.
I feel like I'm in the minority, but I'm going to say I thought it was good. Not excellent, but I think better than a lot of people have been putting it. And I would say that my favorite part was probably the B plot, but which sounds counterintuitive to what I just said, but I guess I'll explain that later.
Okay, interesting. Allie.
I mean, after watching it multiple times, I do like it more than I originally did. I do think it was good. Obviously not in the same, like, on the same level as Korra alone, and probably even the first episode, I forgot what it's called. What is it? After all these years. But I did like it, and my favorite part... What are you snorting at?
Forgetting the title.
My favorite thing, I mean, I guess was also either the B-plot or just Kuvira, because she's amazing.
Delaney.
But yeah.
I really enjoyed the episode. It's not enough to say that I don't think there's some issues with it, but I really enjoyed it. It's one of those episodes that I can keep rewatching, and I'm not, like, cringing. Favorite part, definitely Toph and the Kuvira. I love Toph. My favorite people is great. I just really enjoyed the episode.
I think you mean Yoda. I don't know who
the Bays.
Oh, yeah, it's totally Yoda. It is the Bays, yes. Yoda is Bay.
What?
Yeah. No, Kuvira's Bay.
No.
Yoda. Yeah, no, I was saying, no.
Toph is Bay, too.
Okay.
No, she's Yoda.
Anyway. Yoda's, yeah. Anyway, that was pointless. Okay.
pointless. Thanks, Dylan.
Okay, so I actually did like this episode. I really like the A plot.
No, I love how you thought everyone hated it.
Yeah,
everyone seemed to hate it when they first watched it.
I agree. I actually liked a lot less the first time, but sitting on rewatches,
I've
liked it.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you rewatch it.
So I think this is a clear step down in quality from the first two episodes. I agree with Allie. However, I still think it is pretty good. I thought this was the Earth Queen of the season, like the worst, like,
oh my
very
God,
clearly the
serious?
Worst episode. I thought that episode was good, though. So, like, good, but not anything special. But I actually think this is a step up from that. I think it's really...
Oh, my God.
So there's... I have major, major problems with the B-plot. I think they do some interesting things that can be discussed, and we shouldn't always assume that negative things being presented are inherently, like, bad. Like, you're allowed to present negative things. Specifically, Toph is a terrible person in this episode. I will be defending that position very firmly. But that's okay if you're trying to portray
She's
a terrible person.
The same, though.
So, okay, and again, there's characterization issues with that. But it's okay if you're trying to portray a terrible person, but I don't think that's what they're trying to do here. It's like in season one of Korra, if you're trying to portray unhealthy relationships with Mako in that season, then that's okay, but I don't think they were aware that's what they were doing, right? So if that's this is the case, then this is a problem. And I think this episode has tonal problems because they present Toph in a positive light, but what she's saying is actually terrible. And we will obviously discuss that. I actually, one thing, the big standout to me in this episode is Wu. I thought everything with
That's
him.
That's the big standout.
I thought everything with him was incredible. Incredible.
Oh, I did too.
I agree.
Him and
I don't know about incredible, but it was good.
Here's the thing with Wu to me. Like, his character is such a miscalculation in terms of focusing on him right now. So here's what I'm going to compare this to. This doesn't make... Okay, so I only watch the TV show Game of Thrones, but I'm going to talk about this like it's the book. So you
don't
get into...
Watch two TV shows.
You get into... and not, I mean, I don't read the books,
but... You watch just three, Survivor.
Okay, there's a lot of shows. You get into Wu W-O-O from Survivor. You get into... a certain whatever book it is in Game of Thrones, and the Red Viper appears as a character. And I assume if you read the series going up to that, you're like, oh... Why it's like, oh, we're gonna be focusing on this guy a lot. That kind of sucks. I would really love some characterization for Cersei or for Marjorie or something else. Why are we focusing on this new person who doesn't matter? But turns out his characterization is so good in that book. In the show, right? So I'm pretending like I read the book. In the book too. But he's such a good character, but he's so irrelevant like to the rest of the plot like leading in. So it's so weird for them to just introduce this major character, like with Wu here. Like, there's so many other things they should be focusing on, like for instance, Jinora and Asami, but they aren't. Instead, they're focusing on Wu, this random character who has very little relevance. But that being said, his characterization has been wonderful. Mm-hmm. I love everything they've done with him. I find him super sympathetic.
Wonderful.
Like. And I should note now, I'm going to say it, like, just Sunil Malhotra, his voice actor, oh my god, so good in this episode. He's incredible here. It was so good. Everything he said, all the way he presented his lines.
Exactly. A girl and a boy.
Wow, that's pretty binary. Okay. So I obviously have a lot of positive things to say, but I think... they might be overshadowed by negatives. But, okay, so here's the structure of this. We're going to go through the episode, and we're going to discuss the individual things. When we get to things that are going on with Toph and Korra, we can discuss them individually. But then we're going to, like, come back together at the end, you know, and wrap everything up. Okay. And then there's a ton of thoughts from you guys to read, like, just so much. Okay. This episode.
It's going to go until 5 a.m. for me.
Yep, it's going to be 5 hours.
I'm not sure. Yes. Okay, The Coronation, written by Tim Hedrick, directed by Melkar Zawire, storyboarded by Owen Solchoy, Elsa storyboard artist, and Sean O'Neill. And by the way, if I'm using the last names for people
it's Coronation Day.
Who I'm unfamiliar with, but I'm familiar with Owen and Elsa. Okay, so let's get into specifics. Okay, slow down. Okay, act one. slow down, me. I'm talking a lot. Okay, so Wu is planning his coronation. This is the clip we got in the beginning. He talks about Earthbender Dames, the song of the royal lineage, and how it's going to be a 6-hour show. The best 6-hour show you've ever seen. Wu's great. What do you think of him during the speech with Mako?
The thing about him and Mako in this episode is that I loved the sort of bromance that was blossoming. Yes. Like, I think those two characters just work together amazingly well. Now, much better than they did in the first episode, so, and this is just the first of many awesome interactions this episode, so I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I with Mel.
It's a good idea to put Mako with this new sympathetic
person.
Yeah, it's a good calculation. I think Mako's pretty sympathetic in this episode.
I mean, people have been talking about how it's gonna like calm him down and like calm his temper down. So it might be good for him. It probably is really good for him to like be with this dude.
I also think it's interesting presenting this dynamic, which very easily borderlines on a romantic dynamic. especially on Rue's side.
They went on a date.
Like, I think it, like, that wasn't what I meant, but okay. Like, it was kind of interesting. Like, it was kind of like, oh, it's a joke, haha, Wuko at first. But I think this episode is, like, very clearly getting into romantic dynamic territory between the two. Obviously, Mako, it doesn't seem like feels that way, but I think on Rue's side, it seems like it.
Yeah.
And I think there's a good chance, especially when, you know, of course, we'll talk about this a bit later, but, like, with Bolin and Mako arguing how he's going to get closer to Wu because he wants to get away from Kuvira. So, like, how that might, like, make Mako a bit more sympathetic toward Wu. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I'm trying to maybe read thoughts during this, but I'll save that. Because I have some emails and stuff I could insert thoughts into. Okay, so I think interesting about this speech is that he points out that he's going to have ministers for ruling everything. And then Raiko later points out that there's going to be a delegation of experienced advisors appointed to actually do the ruling of the Earth Kingdom. So it's like very clearly being portrayed as not only is he's going to be a puppet, but it's like probably a puppet of Raiko.
Yeah, like the whole point was we're going to have a puppet.
Yeah, and it's
like going to be like the older beginning. Thing again.
Yeah,
like from Avatar.
Hadn't really thought of it that way. But
Dylan, are you still there?
What? I don't. You're not. You're just saying.
You're saying puppet.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, I'm saying it's going to be like the Earth King again from Avatar. Like, what's
obviously, yeah. But like, I think the interesting point is this is a seize of power by Raiko, right? Like,
yeah,
it's also interesting that he's
and Tenzin's involved. I guess
Tenzin seems involved, but
I don't
seems...
know if they're involved as or if they just know what's going on.
I'm not sure if Tenzin's involved or not.
I interpret it as Raiko is the one.
Yeah,
his advisor.
I didn't interpret it that way, but I mean, I guess
he's the one saying.
He did say we.
Oh, that's
true.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
Anyway.
But it's weird, though, isn't it?
Maybe, like, all the world... Well, they sent Sue as the representative, so I guess all the world leaders are, like, talking about... Yes, I agree.
All the world leaders, including Desna Eska, for the
record.
Desna and Eska are in the world leaders meeting, it seems like.
So they had a meeting, and they were like, we're going to have a puppet government. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Since they also gathered... Shadow government. Yeah. What if they sent? Never mind.
They need some sort of formalized UN. These world leaders...
Oh, my God. This is going to...
Like that's not okay having these random leaders meetings.
Not make this real life, please.
This is real life. Gosh. Okay. So
wait,
Wu
we
says,
talk about how Wu is doing the Beyonce dance.
Wu says it's two kooky pals living the life, and it will be. And he does the dance of the Vatrimals.
Wu touches Mako's chest.
He does the girls dance.
He does do a Beyonce move.
He does
quite exactly.
Perfectly.
So.
Yeah.
I wonder if they modeled it on that.
I was thinking they might have just gone through and grabbed a bunch of dances from YouTube for him to do in the background because he's doing
they
it like,
up
the rest
Beyonce
of the scene. So I'm sure
I wonder
a coincidence.
Too. I'm
singing all the single ladies to Mako, please.
That would be great. Okay. There's no reports of the Avatar, but interestingly, Tenzin is concerned about no reports of Korra. Seemingly not because of Korra's well-being, more because he's concerned
because
about...
he doesn't want the world to... Because
he's concerned about Kuvira, right?
She's fine.
She's fine.
She's probably fine. Okay.
Tenzin says he hears Kuvira is throwing dissenters into prison camps.
Which
is...
Wow.
pretty fascist. Is that where...
Pretty fascist.
Pretty fascist, seems like it.
Hashtag pretty fascist. Hashtag
wow.
That's the hashtag for this podcast. Notice. Hashtag pretty fascist. Okay. Kuvira is apparently is going to step down tomorrow and gave Raiko her word that she'd step down.
I promise.
Raiko's like, yeah, it's fine. She promised.
Did she put her hand on her heart and she's like, I swear I won't take over the Earth Kingdom.
I think that we have to, I think we should remember that they're like not seeing Kuvira day to day like we are. So they're just, I guess, not seeing
we're
like
seeing
how power hungry she is.
And we
right?
are seeing her day to day.
We saw her in episode
they're
one.
They're not in the train with her. They're just hearing.
Raiko did not see the ominous introduction we got to Kuvira with her fighting all the...
He didn't hear her theme music.
Yeah, he doesn't hear the drums playing. Yeah,
her theme music is the best thing about
it.
It is.
Great,
I
agree. We'll get to where it's played later. But and then Tenzin says, I'd feel a lot better if Korra were here.
Because she could do so much.
Yeah.
Seriously.
For real.
Okay. B-plot, first scene.
Here we go.
We get back into...
This is where I go into the corner.
Get into the corner.
Coroner.
Cora.
Wow, Dylan, that's
coroner.
You're in timeout. Okay.
Oh my god.
Toph someone says we have to get back into Avatar fighting shape.
Korra says
that.
Says
the
it.
World needs
there are two people.
There's two. It could have been Toph. I didn't put it in quotes.
I don't know who it is.
The world needs me, says Korra. So Toph says, no, the world doesn't need you.
Get for yourself.
Crime didn't go away when I was the chief of police. If there's one thing I learned on the beat, it's that the names change, but the street stays the same. Okay.
The worst decision I made was letting her be a cop.
Okay. Okay, let's talk about that line, because I genuinely think this might be the worst line of dialogue in Korra history.
I don't even hate it from a dialogue standpoint. I hate it from its philosophical standpoint, because what she's saying makes very little sense.
It's just, I can't even get into, like, what she's, obviously, like, she says what she's meaning afterwards.
She's suggesting that no matter what Korra does, everything will always, this, yeah. like, just continues.
Yeah, which, yeah, so it's very cynical and stuff. Yeah. But beyond that, like, this is a very cliched line. I Googled this line, and this isn't an exact quote. This isn't an exact quote, but there's I've found at least 10 lines from, like, movies and stuff that's, like, almost this exact thing.
Right. Why are you surprised? It's
typical cop thing to say.
It's ridiculous. What? Why would she say something? People don't talk
this
like this.
This takes place in the 20s.
Toph grew up in the 1800s, which sounds like
Toph
the present.
Toph is a grandma living in the 20s. Okay.
Oh my goodness, this really. Line's awful.
It is awful.
Wow. Okay.
You are too hype over this line.
I just can't take the scene seriously. Really, like that's just such so bad.
I will say this much for her dialogue as well. I had trouble.
I also think
I feel like her dialogue in particular was the worst written of this entire.
I completely agree. It's way too blunt. Yeah. She's just saying random things. It kind of seems like, and which kind of makes sense that she'd be disoriented, but like because she's just
like because she's old.
No, because she's like not interacting with people regularly, right? So she wouldn't be the best at like interacting normally, but like it watching a show perspective, her dialogue is just bad. It's the weakest part of the episode, along with the fact that she's a terrible person. She says I'm the original Beifong. This is a good line. I like that.
There's two.
I'm the original Beifong.
So I think
that was not bad.
That was pretty good. If you want to like psychoanalyze Toph here, like she's like put her parents out of her mind, right? Like she's the original Beifong.
Yes. Yeah.
I know that's not what she's referring to Sue and Lim, but like, yeah. That's kinda sad considering that's her big conflict in Avatar is with her parents. Okay. And then
when she was like, when I was chief of police when I was your age,
literally
we
she
had
did the thing.
I was
we didn't have phones.
I did like the no hug a bit.
Yes, that too. Was great. I was like, yes, please.
Want to hug something? Hug a tree.
Yeah. So yeah. No. Okay. But she'll help in hugs. When does Toph say get over yourself? Is it this line? Is it here? Or
she's
is it the
very first thing. Korra is like, oh, I need to get back into fighting shape. The world needs me. And Toph's like, the world doesn't need you. Get over yourself.
I didn't write that down though. Okay. Okay. So let's talk about that line. We're gonna have to get into this now. I wanted to wait until the end, but okay. Get over yourself.
This broke down so fast.
So this is like. Basically,
this family apart.
So here's my opinion of get over yourself. This is basically the worst thing that you say to someone who's going through something like Korra's going through.
Mm-hmm.
It is awful. I have something to read from. I think something to read from Sam, and then something to read from Toon Gal. Let's start with Toon Gal here. So Toon Gal says, Korra being, while I can get behind, this is in response to a post Mel made on Tumblr, and I asked her if it was okay to say this, I can get behind it being a mental and emotional battle for Korra to be able to relax and get rid of the poison as a symbolic sort of thing. Poison being, so we'll get to the poison stuff later. The idea that she's purposely handicapping herself really hits home for me. I suffer from generalized anxiety disorder, and I constantly have thoughts of blaming myself for being lazy and handicapping myself. This has led me some very dark places for me, and blaming someone for their disorder and difficulty is quite offensive to me. Korra is not doing this on purpose. She is frightened. She needs to learn to face her trauma and overcome it, but it's not her fault that she feels the way she does. Emotions are difficult to control. And she says this just struck a nerve for her personally. I have something else from Sam to say on this. Sorry if it takes me a while to gather thoughts here. This is a lot of stuff. So As far as I'm concerned, Sam says, Cora has a mental illness. Those do not go away. They're never fully fixed or resolved. You can't tell someone to get over themselves. The metal can come out, but if this is a reality anyway, she won't stop having a hard time. You can't will this stuff away. Sam uses some language in here, which I won't get into. But yeah, so... and then she says, she can and hopefully will get better. Note I use the word feel because... feel, not get, because future beyond book four, Cora can always go back into a down period at any time. But for all of what she's been going through, to be a product of some metal in her body, or just because she hasn't gotten over herself, that would suck really bad. So the gotten over herself is the important part here, and we'll get to the metal later. But what do you guys think? Do you agree?
The first thing I'm going to say is that I don't agree with Toph's attitude at all. Like, that, I don't know if that came across my post or not, and I was talking to Toon Gal about it, but that I don't agree with in the slightest. However, the event itself, that's something I'm more willing to explore.
The event?
I do think the event being that she has metal in her body, and...
Not even really getting into that yet. We're just talking about Toph's line.
I'm just putting that out there as a disclaimer. That being said, I do hate most of what Toph was saying this episode. I think she was very, very abrasive in a way that I don't think was even in character for her. Because while she's been mean to Aang before, but she's never been cruel in this way. Like, she's, and I guess I don't know whether she's supposed to be treated as knowing that she's doing it or not, but she's, you know, hitting a nerve probably on purpose, which is not very nice to see, especially out of a character like Toph, who's so amazing and probably one of the best characters from the original series. To see her just portrayed this way as someone who would basically emotionally abuse someone into getting better.
Yeah, I have another quote from Sam here, or to read. Sam says, as for the B-plot, it's bitter work part two. Toph's a... giant meanie. I'm paraphrasing the language here. I should have been.
Oh God, I need to look at this now.
I should have been expecting them to bring out
the old
stubborn Toph we know and love, since it's really the first time we've seen her since 2008. But I'm not sure it's what we needed or if it was really appropriate. I mean, during the flashbacks when we saw grown up Toph, she was still Toph, but like grown up, more mature. At least I got the sense that she was more mature in those brief moments. And from what we've heard Sue and Lin, this is 12-year-old Toph and 80-year-old Toph's body. I don't know Toph's life. I wish she wasn't a complete copypasta of her younger self, though, because that really messes up this plot and the potential it had from last episode. So I think it's
I think she acts like 12-year-old Toph. She's like much more abrasive.
So she's
like a bitter Toph.
It's like, as she's at the very least, it's like, it's weird because they presented older Toph and she didn't really maintain her personality from Avatar, but
even the episode before those,
or at like 40, and even then, but now they're kind of like reverting to that, and in a very negative way. Okay, I don't think that's what's going on, but it's just in old age she's kind of gone back to her past self or something.
Well, it seems like, and I'm not like trying to like make an excuse for it, because I mean Toph is my favorite character ever from like anything. And I struggle with like general anxiety and things like that. And like that, this was really like I didn't realize like until we were starting talking about it, like how that really was like how it like affects like the, like my thinking. But because I just like, I was just glad that Toph was there. And so a lot of the things, like the fight scene was really what I liked with Toph, but, it just seems like she's a, like, it's like especially because she kept referring to the cop thing, which I was not expecting her to talk about being a cop, so that really struck me. And like, it almost like she's bitter, like from doing like cop work, like really like just kind of destroyed Toph. I'm not saying like this is an excuse, but like this is, that's just my thinking, like that could be the case, and it's just so different.
It is very different.
By the cop thing, the one thing that's also really awful about this is that you don't say to someone who's feeling this way, you don't say, well, I did this and I got over it.
Yeah.
It's basically what I got from her cop thing. She was like, you know, well, this is what I learned as being a cop, so you should learn it too. Like, that's not, you don't say that to someone who's having emotional trauma.
So, by the way, no pressure for any of you three to have just instantly come up with thoughts on stuff I'm bringing up. Like,
thank you.
A lot of this is
that was definitely directed towards me.
No, I mean, kind of not. No, but
wow.
it's just in general, like
kind of the not like
like. Like I'm presenting just right off the bat some like things that are just not clearly in the episode, and it may take a while to process this. Like Toph is a giant bad person.
Meanie
right
pants.
Meanie.
Like,
she's a giant meanie.
Yeah. So by the way, we keep this podcast.
Which this also sucks too, because I did want to see the sort of you know, I mentioned last week. I was like, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Toph handles it, because she is someone who is in a position with Korra where she also has a handicap and she used it to her advantage and ways around it. I wanted to see that sort of thing, not her being a meanie.
Yeah.
Sam did make a good point. Like, I didn't even think about, like, when we saw Toph, like, in the flashbacks when she was with Sue and Lin, like, she was much more mature and, like, calm back then, like, with when they were having their problems. And, like, I don't know, here she seems like a totally different person, not even, like, 12-year-old Toph.
She seems like the exact person that Lin always said she was, and we just
that's
something to take into account.
I think it's inconsistent characterization.
Yeah,
I would agree.
But that's not that big of a problem, because we did only see past Toph for a little bit. I think the bigger problem is them presenting old Toph in a sympathetic, nostalgic light. The things Toph is saying are terrible. Do you think that they're trying? Do you think they're aware of it, though?
No, I think they think that this is what Toph would say. Because Toph gets the last word in the episode.
My huge worries with any of this is that Mike, and I don't know Mike, Josh, and Tim personally, but my huge
I do.
My big worry is that they don't understand they don't understand some of the things we're bringing up about mental illness. They don't really have the personal experience that some among us or people that I've mentioned, I'm personally going to say that I have, and that they like don't get that these things would be bad to say something like. That's my biggest fear, is that they wouldn't understand this is what you should say and things
and
like that.
And we've seen this before with like the whole thing with Eska and Balin and Mako in book one, like these things where it's like they're not good things, but they're being shown in the show as, like, good.
Yeah, it's like Eska was being portrayed. It's a good point and a good comparison. Eska is being portrayed as comedic comedic relief, while she's just has the sexist characterization. And Varric, I think, is the bigger one, is that he is being portrayed in a sympathetic comedic light, even though he's saying some really sexist things in book two. And again, I think that's a similar thing to say, because, again, I don't know them personally. I don't know how big into gender like stuff they are, and if they're feminists and stuff, but like the writers, that is, but they're not women, and they're saying things and they're putting words in a sympathetic light that are sexist, so it's very easy to say they don't have this experience, and therefore they're not understanding the words that they're writing, the effect that they're having.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that same thing kind of applies here, and it's like another thing that they may not have, and it's very, very troubling. That being said, some of the stuff later is not terrible that they get into. Some of the themes in the last act of Toph, with Toph. I still think Toph is like a bad person there, I don't know. We'll get to that, I guess.
Well, I want to say, like, this might just be me clinging to the hope, because Toph is my favorite character, and I just don't want, you know, I don't want this to be it. And I'm kind of hoping maybe, because, I mean, Toph has done stuff like this before where she's, like, tricking. Like, she could, like, I don't know if she's, like, you know, we talk about her hitting a nerve. Like, she could be doing this all on purpose, just trying to get a reaction out of Korra. I'm hoping that's what it is. It's probably not, but I'm going to...
Even if she is, that's kind of
Yeah, I would agree. It's definitely not... It doesn't make it good, but you know what I mean? Like, it would be... Like, if we see something next episode or, like, further in the season where it's, like, it's still bad in the episode, but I'm just for the overall, like, for the... When we get to the end of the show, and so Toph wasn't, like, you know, does that make sense? Like, it would be better for Toph's character at the...
It's like you want Toph's motivations to be good, even if her actions aren't.
Yes. I feel like the reason she's trying to, like, get a rise out of Korra the way she is because, I mean, she wasn't this cruel to Aang, but she did, like, push him like he is pushing her.
This is interesting, though, because You took literally the most least spiritual character and put them in the most spiritual place, and then didn't use it at all. Like, you know, because she's in the swamp, you're like, oh, man, she's in the swamp. Like, remember what happened last time we were in the swamp? Runs into Toph, you're thinking, okay, she sought the world for spiritual enlightenment. What's going to happen? Well, she's just going to beat the crap out of Korra until she quote-unquote, gets over herself. Everything. Which was not only an awful way to handle a really interesting situation they set up and just kind of poor writing, but also rude to the characters and ignorant of what it might be saying.
I think that in terms of Toph's spirituality, we'll obviously get to that with the scene where she actually talks about it, but I think that they're probably setting something up here in a later episode.
I hope so.
Otherwise,
yeah, I really hope so. Like, yeah. I'm going to be destroyed.
Not insulted, but I would be, really upset.
Alright, so now we have one of my... Back into the positives. We have one of my favorite scenes of the episode. We have the dinner scene of the episode. So now let me talk about why this is called the dinner scene, because they're not actually
eating
dinner.
Yeah, I was confused.
What you were talking about.
So
I was like, no one had dinner in this.
So this is, I guarantee you they have a name for this in the writer's room, but I don't know what it is. So why I'm calling it the dinner scene is because last season, there are two scenes, one in the Metal Clan 305, and one in the Terror Within 308. I get that confused with In Harm's Way. The Terror Within 308, where they're eating dinner in Zhao Fu and they pan. They have quick dialogue between two characters interacting, and they move around the table, seeing different interactions among the cast. And this is exactly what they're doing here, except it's at a party, and they're just different people talking to each other. These scenes are by far one of the strongest aspects of the writer's room in Korra. They're really good at picking some dynamics among characters, putting them together, transitioning them in one scene, and portraying them in really interesting ways. I'm just a really big fan of what they do here. I don't think this one is as good as the ones in Zhao Fu, but I still think it's pretty good. And it's got a lot of really interesting dynamics going on. But they're more obvious dynamics that need to be addressed for the plot, I would say. So we pan through a few different things here. First, we're at Bolin is back, and he sees Eska. And as expected, everything Eska says is just cold, and it's great. I see you have replaced me with a new girlfriend. Well done. She seems very threatening. That line's so good.
It is. It's
the next one is better.
No, I like this best. She says boss girlfriend, same thing, which is very representative of her character. But
yeah.
Well done. She seems very threatening.
She knows what's up.
Like that's a quality that
she knows what's up.
That Eska thinks you look for in people. Yeah,
it's great.
But then. I love the next line,
too. That makes me wonder
why
she chose Bolin, then, because he's not threatening at all.
Well, I think...
No, the point is that she has to be the threatening one.
Yeah, she thinks other people look for threatening. Threateningness in, maybe in females, maybe in people in general.
Maybe in Bolin.
In Bolin. And so then she says, then we have this random guy being like, what do they call her? The title?
I don't even know.
They say to her, they're
your
like
magistry
your
or something?
It's like... Eminence.
Your eminence. It's your eminence, yeah. I'm sorry, Your Eminence, there's been a mistake, right? Like, that guy, that's funny.
What was that voice?
And then that was the voice the guy does, and it's no mistake. Desna sleeps in the tub.
For a second, I was very, very scared, but then it was
okay. Yeah, I thought it was going to be like, we sleep in the same. Yeah. That would have been so funny, but no, unfortunately, no. And
the fact that he sleeps in the tub is great.
That's just so weird. It doesn't make
sense. Which doesn't make sense because they could easily have two beds, but he sleeps in the tub.
Maybe he just really likes the tub.
He just likes the tub.
Like, it's not even that they have to fight over the tub. Like, they could have had two beds.
He's a water feeder, you guys.
I think it's great.
So is she.
I want to know if, Desna sleeps in the tub at home. Like, that's really what I want to know.
Probably, yeah. The royal tub, yeah. In the north.
She's the only one allowed to have a bed in the whole world.
It's such a good representation of like just this weird dynamic or this and these weird people. Yeah.
And then like the look on the guy's face. What?
It's good.
I think he was just happy it didn't end up being what we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that's true.
Same. I was really worried for a minute.
I was like, but then no.
Same.
Okay. Okay, then we have...
I've seen enough anime to know where this is going.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was like. I've seen enough Oreimo to know where this is going.
Oh my god. Oh my god, Dylan, why?
So then we have...
flashbacks.
We have Varric and Julie. First, Varric says that this is... this is the first time he's back in the Republic City Four Elements, which is really funny because the Four Seasons.
I have to listen to that again because I totally did not.
Four Seasons, it's like the famous, Four Seasons famous hotel. It's really, it's really clever.
That's what he's talking about.
Yeah, it's pretty clever and quick, and it's really funny.
Thank you, Alan.
I'm an artist.
Yeah, you're an artist. Great. It's just they do a lot of. I really love what they do with Republic City in this episode. I love Little Ba Sing Se. We're gonna get to that.
I love Little Ba Sing Se.
But it's such.
It's literally Little Ba Sing Se.
They do such clever things, like with this in terms of modern cities. It's so good. Okay, this is the reason why I'm positive on the episode, despite just being incredibly pissed off at Toph. Like, yeah. You're an up.
Speaking of pissed off, did Julie seem kind of pissed off to you?
Julie said, "You're an upstanding citizen again, sir."
She's Pepper Potts. She has to.
She never seems happy. Like,
you know,
so. She's Pepper Potts.
Really, like, she seems over it. Like,
she just looks like monotone, like blank.
She seems so over it.
I just like that they have matching outfits every time.
Yes,
they're never not matching.
No matter what, she has a hat. Like.
I think this is one of the more prominent Julie lines because it's like audible and like clear.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's not doing the thing.
It's a good Julie line because she has a line.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And anyway, Varric and Julie are there. Something else happens at the end of that. Varric talks about soaps. Yeah, but whatever.
He's stealing the soap.
Yeah, he's stealing all the soap.
I do
like lavender.
I do like that they introduce these just pure innocent moments for Varric because it shows that he's just not this evil mastermind. Like he's doing some terrible things and he's probably currently doing something like awful. But like
as we speak.
But like it's not probably coming out of hate. Like he still has this like. Innocence to him, which I really like that they show. I just think it makes his character sympathetic, despite the fact that he's
like
a
dumb
villain.
Iron Man.
Well, Korra's Iron Man, so that's not as Mel says.
Korra is Iron Man. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a very important part.
We're not there yet. Next, we have Mako and Bolin. They have this weird punch introduction.
It was adorable.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you thought it was weird too, because
it's
I also
weird.
It was
weird. People don't
I thought
do that.
It was weird the first two times, and I settled on. I guess it's cute
because they don't speak. Not. They just go into.
Well,
it
is cute.
What?
It is
like,
cute,
how much
but
they
they're
practice
weird.
This?
Yeah, they're apparently
cute. It was weird.
It was
like,
weird.
It's been 3 years, and you punched your brother.
Yeah, like how they remembered it, and they in sync.
Yeah.
To like learn how to do
I
it.
I mean, I like that they gave them like.
It's
a
just
super
a very cliche. It's a very cliche.
So,
greeting. I'm sure there's a trope for it somewhere on TV tropes.
Yeah.
As with everything, but yes.
Thanks, Buffy.
Okay. I don't. I can't comment.
TV Tropes was invented because of Buffy.
I mean, I guess, yeah.
No, literally, you can look it up. It was invented because of Buffy.
But why does that make me Buffy?
I wasn't saying that to you. I was saying
you were just saying in general.
Can we move on, please?
I see. I understand now.
Like,
okay.
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah, thanks, Obama. Exactly. Okay. Bolin's turning around the Earth Kingdom. Mako's working for Wu, and they're sad that there's no Korra.
And, yeah.
She could be dead, but we don't. That's not something
we're
going to focus on.
We have Batar and Su.
He could be dead, but who knows? Nobody.
Batar and Su, it's just...
Batar Jr.
It's just... No.
It's just Batar.
It's just...
I'm sorry. No one said...
It's just Batar now.
And says, hey, insert name Junior.
Except like, for your mom, because they like
no,
to inherit.
I have cousins who are juniors, and they don't call them their name
but
Junior.
But Sue's mad, so she just said it to like
hello,
get a dig.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm still not over the fact that Todd Hypercorn is this dude.
I'm not over like.
I know him
space.
From so much anime. It's really weird.
He's a voice actor, Ali. He's doing his job.
I know him from a lot of like not appropriate anime.
Okay,
not
that's
appropriate.
So Batar says, bet you regret not coming with us.
His evil facial expressions, like, you're talking to your mother.
I kind of wonder, this makes me wonder, like, who, I mean, this doesn't make me wonder, but it makes me wonder who proposed to who.
Well, it is interesting because in the last episode, I assumed he was literally just, like, a toy. She was like, yes, now I have an in to the Beifong family, go me. But he clearly seems
totally
to be very
like,
much about it as much as she is. So.
He's into it, like... He's into that.
And he's, like, really, like, his facial... He's so mean. Like, you're talking to your mom. Be nice. Like, oh, don't be mean to Sue.
He's the rebellious one.
He says, like, bet you regret not coming with us, and you should get over your grudge now, because we're engaged.
Like, how rude are you?
Yeah. So
I feel like this is, like, this is, like, such a Jewish family dynamic. Like...
I think it's not. I don't think this is how that works.
No, it
this
is.
This is pretty antagonistic.
You marry her, and, like, you're not going to get over it.
This is antagonistic, and this. Let's stick to Allie's family. Let's not generalize more. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Fine.
But I don't. Fine. I don't think your family is as antagonistic as Pizarro.
No, so. I'm saying, like, they would be like, I'm not going to get over. You're not marrying this person. I forbid it.
I feel like that's a typical thing in any.
Yeah.
Well, any big family is going to have that. Any important family is going to have. Situations like that. So, and I don't. Did she say I forbid it? I think she just.
No, I'm saying like it wouldn't be that way.
She didn't.
Just be
like,
okay,
whatever.
She was just have an issue with it because Kuvira like did whatever she's to get like, control. Whatever. Like I don't think she like.
Well, okay. Whoa. We have clarification on that in Act 2, so we'll talk about that.
Yeah,
well, yeah.
Okay. Then we have it at the end of Act 1, don't we?
No, they don't talk about that yet.
Yeah, that's right.
Wu then hits on Kuvira, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
Wu says in the line of the episode, "I think someone's pulling your chain, Gumdrop."
Gumdrop. Represent the lollipop cube.
Wu is so great. Kuvira took the presidential suite from him. Something you should know about
she's
me.
She's presidential.
I always get what I want.
And that face.
This scene is incredibly cartoony.
Yes.
It's so ridiculous that like Kuvira like seized the presidential suite.
I don't understand how she did that.
It's so
like, who did she intimidate?
Here's what I don't understand.
Why does she care that much? Like
why we needed that? Because we already got a really good characterization from her in the first episode.
Yeah, this
like,
was
we
like
know what she's about. We don't need her to say.
This was like this is like a reminder, right? And they played in her theme too.
Really like, glad Wu is not like the Earth Queen because she would have been like. Throw her in the dungeon. Like he was just like, oh, whatever, I'll deal with it.
But I like that she got her dig in at Wu, so Wu's like aware now.
Yeah, like,
Well, yeah, it's foreshadowing. She stole something from him.
It's
his room, then his kingdom.
Oh, you hit on me. You don't have a room anymore, bud.
Yeah, but except that happened before that. But yeah, I love this little exchange. I really liked it. I don't necessarily like Wu bringing up the junior suite later, but insulting is sweet.
He's so obsessed.
But it's I thought this was good, even though it was cartoony. Okay, Act 2.
What do you mean by cartoony? Just the dialogue, or like...
Just the concept.
Like the ridiculousness of it.
Imagine it happening between two real-life people, Allie.
It's hard to imagine that. It is difficult to imagine, hence cartoony. Okay, Act 2. The palace was looted, so this is Wu is Wu talking to Gun. I think he's specifically talking to Gun here, right? Like, yeah. That's the guy's name, I guess.
His name is Gun?
That's what it says in the credits.
It was Gun.
It's spelled Gun.
Gone Girl?
No, not Gone Girl. But yeah. No. He was in Book 3 as well. Yeah, he was the one who is like... He's Longfang's position, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where have you been?
Yeah.
He was like, bye, Earth Queen.
Oh my god, anyway, the palace is looted.
Well, obviously we knew that. There's no crown jewels, no pantaloons, and he's going to be using a royal brooch.
No taffeta pantaloons.
Yeah, which was an earring. I don't love this scene, but it was whatever. Not important.
It was whatever.
I enjoyed Mako's expression.
I'm always like, don't touch me.
That was good.
Okay, now we're back to the B plots. Cora and Toph, tell me what you did wrong. So they fight a little bit. Tell me what you did wrong, what you were thinking. And Mel says this is literally Empire Strikes Back. Why is this literally Empire Strikes
Back?
Because
this is, well, this entire plot is kind of the Empire Strikes Back, where you've got the B
plot of
our hero in the swamp. But it's basically, it's just literally a line... that could come from Yoda.
Yes.
Do or do not. There is no try.
Thinking you were.
There is literally a line where he says, where Luke says he couldn't lift something with the Force because it was too heavy, and Yoda's like, that's why you fail, because you thought it was too heavy. So it's literally a much more abrasive and bullyish version of Yoda, but it's literally scenes from The Empire Strikes Back.
It's literally Yoda.
Yeah, it's seriously Yoda.
It's... literally Yoda. Okay.
Yes,
that's
what I saw him in the background.
The name of this episode.
He's in the background. Yes,
I saw him.
Just battling. And I meant that too. Is the entire plot of structure of the episode, which Crossroads, not Crossroads Destiny. The Guru was also Empire Strikes Back, but in a different way. But
yeah,
just the motifs used in it, and the plot structure is very similar to Empire Strikes Back.
Also, the little squirrel frog thing that Brian said he... Brian mentioned that he was proud of it. I want to give that a shout out. It was cute.
I liked it.
Yeah, oh, Brian is that what Brian was talking about in that interview? Oh, okay. The thing that's
Brian
on Cora's
shoulder.
Brian
is the one who does the animals, right?
Yeah, yeah. Brian, they're all Brian. But yeah.
What does Mike do?
He writes the show.
Well, yeah, but like,
he hasn't done very little storyboarding.
What does he do? Okay, Ellie.
Yeah, on Avatar, he did a moderate amount of storyboarding, I would say. I think he's done less on Cora. Maybe very little at all. Okay. So I guess that's the we've switched to metal outlining now, by the way. Thank you, Noel, for outlining the second and third acts. Well, no, that's why I'm
I'd like to say I really enjoyed the fight scene.
I did too. This is probably the only thing with Toph and Cora I really did enjoy, except for the last scene.
I thought it was insignificant. I don't know. I didn't really care.
I mean, it was meh.
It wasn't actively bad, so let's give it that.
It was good.
Of all the avatars I've worked with, you're by far the worst. I know that it's only one other avatar, but still.
Well, the fact that she included that, like, that she was like, eh, it's just one other avatar. Like, I like that
said
line.
That. I was like, wait, you only worked with one other avatar. She's like, I know.
Did Toph secretly work with Kyoshi? That'd be great. Okay.
Oh, please.
God, that would be the best thing.
So Toph says that
she's
more connected to the world than anyone. Did she say she uses vines to see the world?
No, but that's, I assume, she said something about she said the roots of the trees
roots and vines.
Yeah, yeah. It's the stuff they presented in the swamp. You're blind compared to me. Does Toph say Sue and Lin?
She says, I see Sue and Lin. I see Zhao Fu.
Yeah.
You don't understand
I
how
see everything.
Yeah, I think it's
watching her children.
Yeah, she is actually watching her children.
The intense feels
I
had.
No, I think that was a good inclusion.
Great. That was my bet. That was my favorite part.
I kind of don't like how she didn't answer Cora. Like, why did you leave? Yeah. I don't know why she left. Like,
yeah,
I imagine that's because it's something that will be explored.
I don't, because it's Mike and Brian, and they like being ambiguous.
So I have let's take this message from Commissioner Gorgon here. Do you think Toph has actually reached enlightenment in the Avatar universe sense? I get the feeling that the big reveal is going to be that she isn't enlightened, just dealing with her baggage the same way everyone else is. Toph might be a legend, but she's still human, and the same goes doubly for Korra. Maybe that's what she's supposed to take away from this, just let herself grieve. Specifically, I thought the "nobody will come bother you" line implied a lonely pain within Toph.
Yes.
Sure.
I agree. All great points.
I do think she is just running away from her baggage, and I don't think she's reached spiritual enlightenment. I guess there's no other enlightenment.
Which is the only way I will take all the nonsense from this episode with her.
I agree.
Yeah.
If she has become enlightened, it's like not really.
So like we don't know the definition of enlightened in the Avatar world, but in our world, in religions in our world, something an enlightened person would say is probably good. That being said,
enlightened just means knowledge.
Knowledgeable. That being said, there are like stories I remember I heard in Tibetan religion class of enlightened. Bodhisattvas, inherently enlightened, that are doing these selfish things and like mean things. Like, it is possible for an enlightened person to do bad things, though. So I don't think it inherently means they're infallible. I don't know if, I don't know if Mike and Brian have done this research on Buddhism that much, but necessarily.
You could argue her comments from earlier were quote unquote enlightened. Like, her cynical view of the world.
Yeah, well, it's not. Yeah, like I said, it doesn't necessarily. Well, I think that's maybe more of a different sense of the word. But
yes.
But yeah, I don't know. It's just so unclear what any of the enlightenment stuff means in Avatar, because it's been mentioned twice, right? I guess three times now. It's kind of ridiculous until they apply it more. Back to the A-plots. There we have the coronation scene.
Go Boo!
We have people, yeah, one of them says go, one of them says woo, right? Yeah.
Really monotone.
Go woo!
It's like, I wonder who they had voice, though, those two.
Yeah.
PJ. It was PJ.
Was it? Which one?
Yeah. Both of them.
That'd be interesting. Yeah.
It's just like, go woo. Woo!
So, Honora is there. We continue to call her Honora for this podcast, because she's
Nana,
not named.
What's my name?
Oh, Nana. What's my name?
We'll never know.
It's Honora, though. I mean,
so what is the percentage chance that it's Ursa? Like, we're going to figure out soon.
Like, 95%.
I think it's, like, that high, right? She's not going to be named anything else.
It's almost like 500% going to be Ursa.
It's totally Ursa, yeah, but she's still.
But her name is Honora.
But it's still Honora. Like, we might just ignore that and continue to call her Honora.
Like, probably. Because if it's Ursa, yeah, we have to call her Honora. Like, duh.
Yeah.
So,
her middle name will be Honora, if nothing else.
Yes.
So, of note is that Asami is at the coronation. She's just very far in the background. Okay. I believe she's...
Right, here we go.
I believe she's standing next to Mako.
In, yes. Very far
I believe in the background. This is the biggest not good word I can say.
You want your hidden Masami for the week. Mako and Asami spotted.
No, guess what they were doing.
Asami spotted canoodling in
that's
the background.
That's why they were in the back. Yeah,
of the coordination.
No, I think we need some hidden Zutara now that we have a Zuko child.
Yeah.
On screen.
I agree. Oh. Yeah, you should work on that during this. Okay.
Sighs deeply into the void.
Okay, Sam. Yeah.
I'll see
I made
you there.
A mistake.
7 years ago, when did you start this?
Asami not speaking in this or appearing in the foreground is ridiculous in this episode.
Yes.
Okay.
What, like, don't even put her in there. Like,
yeah. Well, it's good.
Do or don't.
Well, no, I think this is better than nothing, but whatever.
Do or do not.
No, because at least if she wasn't there, I could assume she was doing something productive elsewhere.
Like,
so I'm still confused as to why she was there. Like, if that makes like Asami,
well, she's like the
head of
the
industries. So
yeah,
like,
she's like one of the biggest CEOs. She's probably funds the majority of the Earth Kingdom armies.
She's like
Sue is the leader of Zalfu, and she wasn't sitting on the stage. That's just why I was a bit confused. So I was like, I'm glad she was there, but like, it was just like, why?
It was like, why?
It just didn't make. It just didn't mesh up.
Tell me more.
If she talked, maybe it would have been better.
Yeah, like that's that would have been best if Asami had
not
spoken.
Maybe. It would have been better, actually.
Yes.
Okay, anyway, though, Kuvira, besides Asami, which I guess we'll get to when we talk Jinora at the end, we can talk about them as a pair. Kyoshi's Medal of Honor was given to Kuvira, which apparently is the Earth Kingdom's highest honor. So why is this named after Kyoshi? I don't understand.
Because she defeated Shin the Conqueror.
I guess. Because she's like the most recent.
She's,
Earth.
Yeah, I'm gonna imagine
the real reason.
I imagine. Well, because she saved the Earth Kingdom from Chin the Conqueror. Like she did a service for the Earth Kingdom.
I thought she just saved Kyoshi. That's why Kyoshi was.
No, she stood up to Chin the Conqueror.
Yeah, wait, Delaney, what are you talking about? Who saved Kyoshi?
She did save Kyoshi, but she stood up to she killed him.
Yeah, I just thought it was she saved.
She saved the Earth Kingdom.
Who saved Kyoshi? We're talking about Kyoshi.
No, I'm talking about Kyoshi Island when I say Kyoshi. That's what I was saying.
Kyoshi. Oh, okay, never mind.
That's what,
She basically, she stood
or did she
Shin
separate
Conqueror.
Kyoshi Island because she was tired of the Earth Kingdom? Is that what it was?
No, she did it because she didn't want to be taken over by Chin the Conqueror, and she faced off against him, and she literally, he died.
Do you even Avatar Day?
I know, I remember, I just thought she was only defending Kyoshi Island, that's the part I was
No, thinking. She was only defending Kyoshi Island.
Okay, thank you.
She ended up killing him in the process, though.
Yeah,
yeah.
No, I did that.
She was only defending Kyoshi Island.
That's why I said she was only defending the island.
Anyway, when I think of Kyoshi, what I think of is this, like, caricature of her appearing before Aang saying, kill them all, right? Like, that's just what I think of, so.
Bathe in their blood, Korra.
So, and like, didn't Aang make a joke about Kyoshi not being helpful, too? Wait, no, did he make a joke about Yangchen or Kyoshi not being helpful in the finale?
You said I should have known I'd never...
Yeah, like, even they know that Kyoshi is ridiculous, so why are we naming... Why are we naming the medal after...
The Earth
I think it's also just supposed to be an ironic thing.
It's because she was aggressive.
Well, it's an ironic thing for the audience, because Kyoshi is the reason Shin the Conqueror was defeated. We're giving Shin the Conqueror a medal named after Kyoshi.
I agree.
Shin the Conqueror.
That is kind of funny. I wonder if they thought about it like that. Anyway, Kuvira has a speech. She views monarchy as archaic. She says, growing up in Zaofu, I learned that...
Uncle Sue's like, no, don't talk about
me,
stuff.
She's like, yeah, I learned that kings and queens are bad and stuff. She calls it the Dark Ages, calls for an Earth Empire... as noticed in Brian's concept art at the last week at the panel, by Jeff, I think, actually. So good job, Jeff. She discredits Wu and claims he's no authority. Well, she kind of pronounces it, right? Like, you have no authority.
Yeah, she, like, straight up says... I don't understand how she has the authority to say that.
Because she's still
she
the president,
like,
is the thing. Basically, this is her way of saying, I'm not handing over authority, and she controls the military.
And she has all the...
It's not... Okay, so, obviously, power is a constructed entity, which doesn't really exist.
Okay, Game of Thrones.
Yeah, right.
Oh, wow.
So no.
Yeah, like, power doesn't exist, but all her soldiers can march.
Kuvira can pronounce this because she has an army behind her. That's what she's saying.
Well, right? This is like the Lannisters versus the Baratheons in Game of Thrones. The Lannisters aren't on the throne technically, but they still control the kingdom because they have the biggest army.
Lannisters aren't on the throne. That's funny. Funny joke.
Yeah, wait, what are you talking about?
He's technically Baratheon, yeah. But anyway. Because Cersei is like Baratheon, so yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, sure.
That's what she means.
Well, even if you go back farther, they got the power because they had an army, not because they had a clan.
Yes, but anyway, Kuvira can just claim it because she's Kuvira. Anyway, it's her supporters.
That's a stupid reason.
Are cheering for her.
I'm trying to explain, but Dylan has no care for.
Kuvira's supporters, as illustrated by Brian in the concept art.
Wow, he just the people in the quotes.
And, yes, he does. I'm used to it by now.
So then we have Varric and
he's giggling about it.
We have Varric and Bolin talking in the presidential suites. Right?
Are we gonna forget the part where she just crushed the metal? Like how
she crushes the thing.
She crushes the metal.
Yeah. So Varric. Varric's like, yeah, this is great. Bolin's apprehensive.
Bolin's like, no, it's not.
Nice word, no.
You're welcome.
And then there's the spirit vine at the end who comes in and he's like, this is a good specimen. Take it back to the lab and get it stabilized. Does he say stabilized?
Yeah, he does.
That is interesting. Okay. And we will discuss this at the end. To me.
Because it's not stabilized?
I want to know how they got it removed.
Yeah.
They chopped it off.
No, but my thing, like, they've had all these issues with
them. They've had issues with them, yeah. It's interesting.
So they've had issues with getting rid of them. I don't think they tried cutting them.
But if they could cut all of them?
Well, they tried cutting them, then they regrew.
That's too much to cut.
Anyway.
Somehow they got a vine.
To me, this is the most interesting part of the episode. I love the whatever was going on with the spirit vines. We called it in the trailer discussion, and we'll discuss it more at the end.
Yeah, okay. We're smart.
I actually didn't see any other discussion on that.
Go us.
So that's good.
I did, all over Tumblr.
Nope. Kuvira and Bolin are talking now. Kuvira claims she needs Bolin's help. She's very gentle with him.
Her duality is revealing again, I'm all nice.
Bolin calls the Earth Empire very aggressive. Podcast.
Empire is just ridiculous.
Yeah,
such a ring to it.
Kuvira says that was just some tough rhetoric to show them we mean business. Believe me, conflict is the last thing I want.
Which I don't think she's lying.
So that's an interesting. No, it's a really interesting point.
She doesn't want to be opposed.
Let's talk about that at the end of this act. So Bolin then says he'll stay at Kuvira. So now we have Sue and Kuvira talking.
I'm rooting for you.
Sue comes.
I was rooting for you.
Batar only exists to open doors.
That's Batar in the scene.
That's all he does.
Allie, that's rude. Sue is the representative of world leaders.
Because
she knows Kuvira.
We should go.
Right? Kuvira.
No, Sue, you got it.
Kuvira says
Sue and Kuvira hate each other. Let's send Sue.
Kuvira says that Sue did not aid the Earth Kingdom when the Queen fell. Sue says she didn't want to seize power like you did. You have to step down. I stepped up. I provide stability and equality. Step up 5.
Oh my god, please.
Step up 4D starring Kuvira.
Wait, are there 4 movies already?
Well, are 4, yes.
There's 7.
Isn't there 3D and the 4?
Yeah, because I had to go see 3D.
Anyway, yeah.
And then Step Up Revolution.
starring Kuvira.
Dance Revolution.
So then the most interesting, obvious thing that Sue needs to point out is you're just another tyrant, and interestingly, Kuvira does not really dispute this. She just follows it up by threatening Xiaofu.
You'll know what'll happen to Xiaofu then.
So Sue's like, you're a tyrant. I know what you do to these cities. And Sue's like, you know what's coming for Xiaofu. So, this relates.
Destroy her own city?
This relates to the question of, do you believe Kuvira in that she doesn't actually want conflict? Because this seems to contradict this line of what she's saying here when she's threatening Xiaofu.
I don't think she wants to be opposed. Yeah. It's not conflict. He just doesn't want to exert effort to. Any more than she already has.
Yeah.
Which is why she puts them in work camps instead of fighting them.
I don't think she's not going out of her way, but if she's being directly opposed, she has to deal with them.
So I think
Sue, like so Sue's in direct opposition to her.
Here's an interesting question. What is Kuvira really threatening? Because in episode one, nothing she does is bad. All she does is withhold her help. So she's not really withholding her help from Zalfir, right?
Well, no, this line was a result of Sue says, I know what happens to the cities that don't pledge loyalty to you, the work camps. And she said, then you know what's coming for Zalfir. So I think the implication there is that she was going to imprison Zalfir.
That's the thing. We don't see, we don't really, yeah. That's like a rumor. That's interesting though, because we don't, that actually kind of contradicts what we see in episode one.
Yeah, we keep seeing her
it only seems like she's just going to leave.
We don't know that she, that was the only thing she did in episode one. People have been like thinking that she like hired those.
I know.
Bandits.
Yeah. Is she confirming that she hires bandits? Is she confirming that,
this is literally a government conspiracy.
It was, yes. Yeah, but,
it really is.
So yeah. The question is
this
she like
is literally fascism?
Is she like is she like confirming that she does bad things here, or is she just using these rumors against Sue to threaten her, even though she's really not doing
probably
anything bad?
Both.
Yeah. Well,
I feel like
it's not as bad as it everyone says. I think that's what you mean, Allie. Like,
I feel like it's hard to say because what we saw in the first episode could have just been one tactic. I mean, that could have been the first line of her reaction, and then if that didn't work, then it would come down to just all out like lock down the city and put them in prison. So,
in the first episode, Opal was like, I know how you help towns. You conquer them. I'm tired, Mel. Be quiet. She says you conquer them. So like the thing we saw in episode one could just be like one thing.
Yeah, I think enough people have at this point told us about the conquering and the prisoning, and all the conqueror that we can take that for fact.
I would like to see it though. Like, I want to see it.
I think it's so. I actually don't believe the rumors against Kuvira right now. I don't know. That's weird. But from my perspective, I think we were showed so much in episode one that I'm just going to believe what we saw on screen in that episode. Like, I think that was like a very clear depiction of what happens.
I don't think that's a regular thing that happens.
She's already taken 90% of the Earth Kingdom. You think if it was that bad, they would have already done something. You know
what
I mean?
Well, isn't there or that they would have confirmed it or something. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
But they, they don't know. They weren't with her the whole time.
Well, then where'd
the
rumors
come
from?
That's my thing, because they keep these rumors, but then, like, that's my, I just, I don't know.
It is
not to say that every rumor is fact on basis, but then where'd the rumors come from?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even rumors that, like, Kuvira worships evil spirits and drinks blood or something like that. It's that there are actual prison camps somewhere in the Earth Kingdom that she is putting people. Like, that's more of a concrete thing to say.
I think it's interesting that Tenzin says that line, but he has airbenders all over the world. You'd think there are a few of them we don't think, like, Opal and Kai shouldn't be the only ones in the Earth Kingdom. The Earth Kingdom's the largest landmass, so you'd think they might have seen
about how many. Think about how many airbenders there are.
Well, we know Ryu isn't doing.
Well, I just meant if they're flying around and you would think they'd maybe notice a prison camp.
Anyway.
Well, that's what
he said. Anyway.
Maybe they're hidden.
Anyway. They could be underground.
In the earth.
Anyway.
Underground.
Anyway.
Anyway.
Shut up.
The thing to take away from this is that it seems like we will be getting a conflict at Zafu soon. As we see in the trailer. So, you know it's coming. Actually, if you look at the timeline, behind Korra in the trailer is, in that scene of Korra facing off with Kuvira outside of Zafu, is Opal and Jenora. We know next episode, the Earth Kids will be going to the swamp.
The Air Kids.
The Earth theoretically. Kids. Too much Earth. This season's so earthy. Anyway.
Go home, hippies.
Theoretically, the timeline is kids at swamp find Korra or something. Kids and Korra go to Zaufu, meet Kuvira there, conflict. And also Opal and Kai come to Zaufu.
That's a lot to happen in one episode.
Well, that's not like over the course of the next few episodes. That
I think
the
next episode will be the swamp, and then the episode after that will be Kuvira.
Yeah, like I don't necessarily think they'll leave next episode, like from the swamp.
Maybe at the end of the episode.
Yeah, I'm just saying the next few episodes. And also, if you are looking for a Jinkai reunion, maybe look to Zaufu.
Please.
That is what I would say. Okay. Act three. Let's speed things up, but it's not happening. Okay. Mako and Wu are talking somewhere. They're in the suite,
They're
in the junior suite. And
Mako, my big tough guy.
Apparently. I don't know. Yeah. Such a
ship it.
Ship it.
I ship it somewhere.
Wu Go. Ship it. Okay. I agree. Yeah. Let's go shopping, says Wu. It's pretty great.
Let's go shopping.
I'll buy you a smoothie.
Happens later.
I apologized.
So then Bolin comes. Bolin and Mako talk. Bolin believes in Kavira. Mako is like, and we're making history by crushing anyone who gets in your way. Kavira is just like Korra.
Kavira says.
Says
and
Bolin.
Then that face. Can we talk about that face?
I think it's interesting.
Talking about that line.
It's interesting from a Bolin point of view that he's like latching onto another Korra type figure.
I was thinking that too.
Yeah.
Well, this is something that Bryke also said at one point.
And the fact that
they wanted to create Kuvira.
They say it all the time. They've been constantly saying it.
As a sort of not, I don't know if it was necessarily as someone just like Korra, but someone who was similar to Korra in age and sex and all.
I really
stuff.
Didn't think they would say it like. In the show, like, I didn't think they would have a character say it.
Well, it's interesting because, and I sent this in. I obviously was on the podcast, but what's the difference between Great Uniter and the person who's supposed to keep balance in the world? Like, it's just two different ways of achieving the same end. Kavira said she wanted equality and stability. That's the same thing Korra wants. It's just two ways of going about it.
Mm-hmm. It's just like, and it kind of goes back to Korra alone, and she's like, it should be me out there, not her. You know, Kavira was doing her job, like what she felt like.
No, what are you laughing at?
I didn't laugh.
Oh, never mind.
I think you're hearing things.
Well, I'm tired.
Anyway, I like this from Bolin's perspective. I also think it's an interesting scene from the Wuko perspective. Mako's like, well, no, I don't think Wu would be a great leader either. And then Wu hears that and isn't like mad at Mako. I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, you
but then he gets
him.
Mad at
the
like,
he knows
him.
He's not going to be doing it. So, because he literally
says, as revealed later, yeah.
Well, no, but in the beginning of the episode, he says, I would have ministers to rule the country.
Yeah,
like, I'm not
true.
Doing that. I'm just going to be king. So.
Yeah, because he was like, we'll just be pals in the Earth Kingdom.
To be king.
Like, he said that.
Yeah. So. He just wants to.
So he didn't really. He just wants to party with Mako.
He just wants to marry Mako in the
21 and over.
Yes.
I don't know about you. I'm not doing that again.
Please don't.
I don't know about you. I'm feeling 22.
I avoided that whole song on my birthday.
Except when I posted on your wall.
Except when I didn't click play.
That's you saw that I posted it though.
I saw it, but I didn't listen to it.
And by the way,
it just sat on my wall.
Mel is Mako because both are 22. So you know.
I'm Asami.
Just saying. Anyway.
Actually, I'm probably closer to Mako.
Well, who's your Wu though? That's
who's Wu?
Okay, Mako and Wu go to little Ba Sing Se Fashion Mall.
Oh God!
Who? I'll it's buy you if Wu. It's Wu. I'll buy you a smoothie. Says.
Mako's
like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's like, okay.
Yeah.
A little kid. Yeah. He's like, okay.
Hey, if someone offered to buy me a smoothie,
I would not.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be all over the smoothie, but. Like,
I really want a smoothie now.
Then we're back to the B-plot.
Do they have smoothies in Japan?
Yes,
I assume they do, Al. You're there, so you can figure it out. Korra and Toph are post-fight. I forgot how much I miss tormenting the Avatar. Toph is Toph. This seems very Toffy.
I like that line a lot.
Toph says, casually brings up that Korra still has the poison inside her. Mel says she's
like,
Iron Man.
LOL,
casually.
By the way.
Yeah. You can get it out for me, right? Who do you think you're talking to?
She needs an arc reactor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
keep
true.
It from getting to her heart.
Yeah, I mean that would like go to Varric. Varric, who actually is Iron Man. So.
Well, I didn't think about that. What if it could move to different parts of her body? Like,
well, that's what the magnet's for. It holds it in place.
No, but for Korra, I didn't
know
about that.
Well, that's why she's a reactor. Okay, Mako and Wu.
Now I get it.
Oh my god!
No, I love how Toph is also like, "LOL, Lin and Sue aren't that great."
I know, seriously.
Well, no, she was like Sue.
Someone
Sue never got the hang of that.
No, she said
she said both. She said my girls. Never really picked up.
She said girls, not girl.
No, she said girls.
Said my girls.
Okay, I'll believe you.
I swear to God.
Okay.
Before then, I thought someone said that they thought, like, before Toph was like, my girls never picked it up. Well, someone thought that, like, Sue left some metal in there on purpose. So I was like, no, do not.
Okay, we're past the point where we're all suspicious of Sue.
Yeah, Sue is not.
I don't know. Okay, anyway, Mako and Wu are in Little Ba Sing Se. He sees the Kavira shirts. Ace is right. Yeah, what does that mean, ace is right?
And have you never heard the term aces, like when someone says something is aces?
No.
It's kind of an older term. I don't know if it's
I
as old
I've
as...
I
honestly want to say it's more 50s than 20s, but
what
yeah,
does it mean?
Like it means it's cool. Like when you see, like, oh, you see a car, you're like, aces, oh man, that car is aces.
That's so.
Because why are you all of a sudden using like aces, old dialogue?
Because ace is like the highest card in the deck.
This so, like, the, before the you coolest were using thing. Something.
This hunk of junk stuff. It sounds like that, right? Yeah. Anyway.
Dick, Like, you're talking like my grandma, so this I don't understand.
I was going to say something, but I'm not.
Who goes to confront the supporters? He says, this is the little Ba Sing Se shopping mall, and I'm the little king around here. Respect the brooch.
I'm the little king.
I'm the little king around here.
And then someone says, go away, little king.
Oh, yeah, go away, little king. Oh, my God. Who's so great? Like, that line is so good.
Little Ba Sing Se.
It
exists is incredible.
It's, yeah, I mean, obviously a play on little various
Italy, but,
Chinatown.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's like Little Italy and
stuff. Oh, we're in Ba Sing Se though, right?
Yeah.
No.
So why is there a little Ba Sing Se?
No, it's not. City, Republic guys. City is
okay. I was very confused about that.
We're not in Ba Sing Se. This is much farther north. Wu and Mako are chased by Kavira supporters. They run into the palace.
Can we talk about the editing issue that was blatant?
Oh wait.
Yeah, Jeff brings this
Can
up.
Can we go back for a second?
No.
It was so obvious.
Can we go back?
Yes.
Because Wu was like, sorry, you're not coming to Ba Sing Se with me. Does that mean he's just not going to Ba Sing Se? Like, Wu isn't going to Ba Sing Se?
Doesn't seem like Wu's going to Ba Sing Se at all.
So what is he going to do?
Well, I don't
know. He's
going
to do what he's been doing.
All right, whatever.
Settle down with Mako in Republic City instead of Ba Sing Se.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
And be a little, yeah.
And be a little king, yeah. They run exactly. into the...
The little king of little Ba Sing Se.
Yes. And drink smoothies all day.
Wu is like,
little smoothies.
It's a little smoothie. Yeah, it's like Mako. It's destiny. The palace. Yeah, it was great.
This was really sad.
I am the glorious defender. That was
this
the,
is actually
the best
was
line
pretty sad.
It made me upset. Like, it's now
the restaurant kid is sitting on the throne, and Wu's like, hey, it's
because it was probably his home at one.
It's
point.
My coronation day. Mako tells Wu that Kavira is at least trying to make the Earth Kingdom better, asks Wu if he is the kind of person he'd want as king, and Wu is really sad. And he says, he doesn't say spoiled jerk.
He says, I've been a jerk, I think is what it is.
I don't know. If
he well, you
jerk,
have to give
but... us
No, he says, jokes on me, I got what I deserve.
Yeah.
I'm a joke that got who Wu.
Yeah, so I love that Wu is self-aware, too. Like, yeah, just everything about him, great.
Yeah.
He's great.
I agree.
Just...
I love how it was all modeled after the Earth King, and there was Bosco, and he had the
hat. And there was Bosco there too, yeah.
And like the cape. It was great.
This is the type of thing that they've been doing a lot in Republic City. That these like this to me
terrain
this episode
nostalgia.
To me this episode makes me think of Night of a Thousand Stars in Book Two. Just this really clever things that are like happening in the background almost and not the focus. It's I think they're being so I think. That the writers are like, wow, we're really clever. And, and I think they are, but at the same time, it's not as important as what's happening in the foreground. So maybe we should focus on that more. But yeah, like they are really clever, so you're right. Okay. You're right, writers, you are. Okay, so back to the B plot, and now I can get into this poison. Toph dun, dun, dun. Tries to remove the metal of Korra.
Metal, you know what I mean.
Metal out of Korra. Your body is like a twisted tree trunk. What? I don't know. That's a bad line.
And she's in the swamp. She's got swamp metaphors.
She's
now.
Got, yeah.
She has swamp.
That line's just, it's that's the type of bad dialogue Toph has. Korra, resist the removing it. Toph says she's too tense, right? She says she won't.
Yeah. It, she says it wouldn't hurt if you would relax.
She wants to keep the poison in. You're going to have to do this yourself. Clearly you want to keep the metal in there, so you have an excuse to not go back being the Avatar, and says Korra is afraid of getting hurt again. When you want it out, you can bend it out. I can't deal with all your issues for you. Okay, two different lines here. So the first line, Toph accusing Korra of wanting to keep the, purposefully wanting to keep the metal inside herself. This is a terrible thing to say. It's completely insensitive. It's not understanding how these things work. It's psychoanalyzing Korra for herself and accusing her of that being on the surface instead of in the subconscious. And it's something if you say to someone who has this type of problem that really regresses them and really makes them regress and doesn't help at all, makes them think it's true and starts blaming themselves. It's not productive, and it's just a really mean thing to say.
Yeah.
I agree.
No, I agree. And when I made that post, it was the suggestion is that Korra was subconsciously doing this because I don't think she's doing it on purpose, like Toph said.
she couldn't have been doing
she it. She didn't even know it was there.
She didn't even know, but, yeah, like, she couldn't have been doing it
on purpose. You know, I don't, you know, I think, yeah, subconsciously, that's the whole point of her being tense. She wasn't purposely sitting there saying, I'm going to be tense and that's going to prevent this. No, she was tense because she's very tense right now. She's very anxious. She's very paranoid. She's very scared. So, yeah, maybe the logical jump is subconsciously she wants to keep it because it'll keep her safe. But that's not something she's purposely saying, like, oh, I'm doing this so I don't have to go back to being the Avatar. She's going to have to face that maybe what she's doing, but she's not sitting there thinking it.
So,
and I think they use that line to, like, try to speed along, like, what they're trying to get at, which I don't think is necessarily the best way. But that's, like, obviously why that's why those lines were said, is to get that going, the ball rolling on. Does that make sense?
I think I agree with that. Like, I think they're trying to get into this whole Korra not wanting to be the Avatar. They're trying to relate it very quickly, and they have Toph say it bluntly, which is just a horrible thing to say. So, like, here's the point. Regardless of whether or not that Toph is right, she might be right. Doesn't matter. That's not Korra. One, Korra isn't doing it on purpose. Two, you don't say this. You don't say that to someone like that. It's just a terrible thing to do. Let's read Sam's thoughts on the scene. Sam says, so that scene happens when Toph is trying to get the metal out. It's kind of reminiscent to a therapist and a patient, or at least a mindset, that one has to be relaxed and open to treatment for it to work. Though this is physical. It's not like Korra doesn't want it to work. Korra really wants it to work. When I emphasize the thing, I'm like replacing a curse word there. So Toph says that clearly you want to keep the metal in there, which rubbed me completely the wrong way. Korra subconsciously wants the metal in there so she's an excuse not to be the Avatar so she won't get hurt again, according to Toph. I mean, maybe that's a thing, again on a subconscious level. But I don't think Toph is right to tell Korra to get over herself like this. She doesn't have a right to tell Korra that she wants the metal in her body. It's like telling someone who's depressed to stop being selfish and that other people have it worse than you do, as if that helps. It's a 12-year-old Toph thing to say, I guess, which again, Toph's lack of maturity screws up how this would have went. I don't agree with Toph's attitude. I'm glad this episode wasn't just a quick fix, like it could have been, but I'm not glad that it went down this route of telling someone that they just need to get over themselves. PTSD, which Korra has been exhibiting, doesn't work that way, nor does any other mental illness. I think the metal being used as a, oh, this is why I'm stuck right now, is pretty not good. I can understand it physically, but I hope that if, when it is eventually taken out, it isn't the cause of Korra's mental state, that as soon as it's gone, Korra stops having flashbacks and stops having struggles in that direction. That'd be pretty cheap. Not to say I don't want Korra to continue being sick. I want her to feel better, but not if it's just a quick and cheap. Not if it's this was the thing screwing me up and I'll just remove it and go back to awesome Korra and forget all these hallucinations happened. So, 2 points to make here, I think, really. I think that was actually really well articulated by Sam. Yes. So first, yeah, it's like telling someone who's depressed to stop being selfish and get over, and like the people at worst that you get over yourself. It's a terrible thing to do. It's just really insensitive and really awful. The second point, and now we can get into a discussion over this, is the use narratively of the poison and the metal. So I basically have the same initial reaction as Sam to this, which is I really don't want this to be the cause of what's going on with Korra. I don't want this to be a fix-all. But then, I also think that that's not how they're presenting it.
It wasn't a fix-all, because they tried to fix-all and it didn't work. I mean, and this is what I said, the biggest point, I think, is that the hallucinations and what she's feeling is still real. You know, the poison didn't say... The poison doesn't know what Korra is afraid of and what Korra isn't. Yeah, it facilitated this, it messed with her brain a little bit, but she's the one creating these hallucinations. You know, they're not random. She's not seeing random things flying around. She's seeing Amon and Vatu and Unalaq and Miss Dark Avatar Korra. Like, she's creating her worst fears. It's just, this is bringing it to the surface.
While I think that's true, I don't want that. I think what you said is valid. I don't want it to affect her mind at all. That is, I think that really diminishes what she's going through. I think that makes it the cause of it. I think that makes it like Korra doesn't have mental illness. She just had this poison. Yes, it's still her. Yes, she's still seeing something that's in herself. But it's like, no, it's not. It's like we're now.
It lessens the whole journey. The whole point.
This is my response to this being still being a valid form of PTSD. Is that okay, so when she doesn't have the hallucination, she still has flashbacks when she's doing something aggressive and doing fighting. I mean, we saw it in the first episode, or the core alone. She, you know, couldn't win the fight because the second she got to a certain point, she was just triggered, had a flashback, and couldn't do it. It happened here. Like, in the middle of trying to get that poison out of her body, she was triggered, had a flashback, couldn't do it. I don't think this diminishes it, because those are two separate things going on.
Well, I'm more concerned about, like, where, like, the, like, my biggest concern is the moment where the poison is gone. How will Cora be? Because I'm not going to be okay with it if Cora's suddenly okay just because the poison's gone.
I totally agree.
I agree with that. So I don't really understand why, like, why the,
like,
poison...
Like, my issue is, like, where it looks like it's going right now. Not necessarily, like, what it looks like right... Like, well, okay, I guess that's...
Okay, well, we'll get to where it's going in a minute. Okay. But to responding to Mel, I don't... I think they very easily could just say the poison's the cause of everything that's going on with Cora. That's I don't see why it has to be one aspect of what's going on.
They could, but they haven't yet. And
they haven't said that it's the cause of anything. They haven't said that it's the cause of anything, though, right?
No, that's a lot of the assumption a lot of people are making are saying, okay, the prolonged use of mercury might be messing with her head, which might be true. It might not.
It's just presented as the physical issue right now.
The only thing Toph said is that it's affecting her physically, which it would, because it's sitting in her muscles and it's not allowing the tears in her muscles to heal, which is the only thing right now we know it's affecting. It's possible that's what's causing the hallucinations. It's also possible that's not what's causing the hallucinations. But I'm going from the standpoint of most people assuming that this is the root of everything. And as for what you said, Delaney, about where it's going, it's not... So yeah, the poison comes out and she's all better, but we've established right now that the poison can't come out because of where she is mentally. The point isn't the poison's coming out. The point isn't the poison. The point is what she's doing about it.
Right, so that's the next thing, is that they turn this into a thing. Let me read the Toph's line again at the end here. When you want it out, you can bend it out. I can't deal with all your issues for you. So they're narratively turning, correct me if I'm wrong, Mel, but they're turning this poison into a representation of Cora's mental issues that's going on with her.
Yes.
She needs to deal with them on her own. Toph can't fix everything for her.
Yes.
I believe, I think that's a thing that they could do, and they did do it, but... What this implies is that the poison is the cause.
Yeah,
even though Cora still has to resolve it on her own, it's resolving
it could
this external
cause, the cause.
It seems like it's presented at the end here in terms of you need to bend it. The main problem here is you need to bend the poison out. And I can understand why they would represent this very theoretical concept of mental illness with a physical presence within the show. I think Cora alone, to a lot of people, might have been a very confusing episode that's kind of hard to understand what's going on with Cora. And I think a lot of people latched on and posted and gave me feedback. No, this thing that Cora's seeing is real. That's what it proved at the end. People really kind of have a hard time grasping of things going on inside people's heads. And so I think manifesting it physically might be a good...
Especially in visual media.
In a visual medium like animation, that's a good point. Manifesting it physically is as a way of telling the story. The problem with that is that it really is diminishing and insulting to what's going on in Cora's head and Cora's mental issues. It's attributing her problems to this poison instead of attributing them to her PTSD. Which, as I received an email I'm going to read pretty soon, was a really realistic and good interpretation in Cora alone. I think it was pretty clearly represented. I don't know if this is when I should read the email or not. Let's do it now, because I think it furthers what I'm saying. I think that it, We clearly, I think, present her with having PTSD. And now, instead, we're saying maybe that's not why she's going through all this. Instead, it's this poison. I think it's really troubling. Any comments before I read further comments on Cora's PTSD representation?
I mean, I have a lot, so I'll wait until you...
Okay, well, this is kind of a bomb. Like, this is
going to be fine.
Pretty important. Okay, so this is from an email from... Gavi. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Gavie. So she sent a really poignant email, and It's, and I'm going to read part of it. She says that she's a longtime listener. Thanks for listening and stuff. So she can approach the, give us expertise on what happens in Coraline. And this was sent after last episode, so she hadn't seen the current episode when sending this email. So she says she has expertise to bring on two levels here. One is that she's a psychology major, but the other is that she has experienced PTSD herself. And she asks, she gives details in the email, but then asks me not to include details if I'm going to read on the podcast, which I will, of course, honor. So, but the short of it is that she was in a school shooting when she was younger and experienced PTSD afterwards, went through a recovery process through many things. And so she feels like this. So she has then further comments. So now I can get into the part I can read. So she says, I'm writing to say all this because I believe Bryke are having very real dialogue with Cora's fans about trauma and mental illness. When I watched the season 3 finale in Coraline, I was in shock, actual shock. The hallucinations of Amon, Unalaq, and Vatu, the rage and super strength that accompanies raw terror. In the photo above, Cora is poisoned, but that face haunted me for days after watching the episode. She's just staring, not dismissively to the thousand, not dismally to the thousand-yard stare of PTSD-affected war veterans. Not dissimilarly, okay, sorry, to the thousand-yard stare of PTSD-affected war veterans. In her recovery, her physical weakness that directly contradicts a huge part of her identity that she previously understood as innate and intractable. I'm the Avatar, you got to deal with it. Her difficulty in finding people who will let her be angry about the unfairness of the situation, even perceived coldness that even we, the viewers, feel from characters like Katara. Her slow recovery, even if no one else is fazed by her progress speed. Seeing flashbacks and nightmares of Zaheer, even as she runs away, literally, and abandons her old life. Cognitive distortions, seeing herself from the outside. It was also already mentioned on the podcast about feeling attacked by non-physical entities, and that's definitely an issue. Also, which has not been addressed yet, would be guilt. PTSD sufferers are riddled with guilt and shame that we can hear that in her refusal to reply to letters and to run away without her support of Team Avatar and company. A lot of people experience similar symptoms after a traumatic event, but what really can cement Cora as having PTSD for me is the length of time that her symptoms have lasted. A non-long-term response is usually seen as taking a month to recover, but given that she experienced physical trauma as well as a direct threat on her life, I would give it longer due to the immensity of her situation. If we apply our often faulty diagnostic tools to Cora, I believe it would land her with PTSD with strong dissociative symptoms, if not the dissociative subtype, and probably a comorbid diagnosis of depression. I would not consider her to be schizophrenic, as her illusions are indulged by multiple traumas and her behaviors are consistent. Other than her hallucinating and her old self and her attackers, she seems to be able to function really, function in reality, and even accepts that there is something abnormal about her current experiences. I would not consider her a candidate to dissociative identity disorder, as it is a highly contested diagnosis, and B, it would involve her not feeling like she and or her surroundings were somehow unreal, but that she was in an actually completely different person. So. Firstly, thanks a lot, Gabby, for the email. So here's my thing with how this relates to the current situation. And of course, this is without having seen the current episode, so I don't know what you would say about what we saw here. Is that we can elicit that type, if Cora alone elicited that type of response from someone who's personally gone through this, and like they see it manifest on screen and see, like, they can relate to what's happening. They see what Cora is going through and see it as, like, a realistic, interesting representation. I feel like anything that diminishes that is really problematic. And I feel like that's kind of what the poisons, like, is might be going on here. Diminishing this this really good mental illness representation, which we see in episode 2.
I agree.
Sorry. Thoughts, I mean, while I recover from talking?
I have a lot of thoughts, but it's a difficult topic to talk about without accidentally, you know, insulting someone, because I don't have personal, experience with PTSD and that sort of thing, but I'm just going off what we've seen so far in the show. And I'm sticking to my point here where, you know, this doesn't mean she doesn't have PTSD. It's the only thing we know right now is that, yeah, she's somehow physically inhibited by the poison, but we know that she has triggers. She has flashbacks that are independent of that. Like, that's in her head. And I feel like the poison, if it's doing anything, it's bringing to the surface, you know, these hallucinations, which can be a symptom of PTSD, as we talked about, or as you guys talked about last podcast, and I noted from the book Demon Camp. But it's just, in this case, I don't think that's a specific symptom she's exhibiting, but I don't think, I can see where the poison would diminish this for someone. Like, I can definitely see that. It's just, for me personally, like, that's the way I view it, which may be completely wrong, but that's where I stand right now, is that the poison isn't doing this work for her. She's doing it herself. The poison's just making it easier for it to show up.
So I think there's a difference between attributing, like, a certain aspect of what she's going through, like hallucinations, to the poison, rather than saying the poison is inhibiting, or what's incubating something like that, like the negative things that are already happening. Like, I think the first one is bad. The second one is possibly okay.
Like, if she's still suffering after the poison's removed, like, I say I'm going to be okay with that. That's not good, but from a narrative perspective. Can you repeat
that? I think she will be.
Well, I think, because, like, she will have to have recovered mentally for the poison to be removed. Is that what you're saying? Because that's what...
Well, not even that. Yes, she does have to recover mentally to allow herself to let go of all this crap she's feeling that's making, you know, her feel awful. But I do think there's an element of this that is completely independent of the poison, that we've seen those flashbacks have nothing to do with her hallucination. She's just scared. And I think that's something that she'll have to deal with independent of removing the poison.
Well, I hope. I hope for all of this. It just, I feel like just having the poison there in conjunction with it, just you can't help but to tie the two together. And, like, the fact to me that she has to have, like, she has to, like, I, like, see, I don't see why we need the poison.
I feel like that's the sort of flaw in everyone's thinking about this, is that they automatically assume it's responsible for everything, where literally we're, you know, most people think, okay, it's probably responsible for hallucinations too, but the only thing the episode told us is that it's hurting her physically, because it is, because it's sitting in her muscles,
but it's
tearing
easy
her muscles
to tie it
up.
Back, because when she was poisoned, that she had the hallucinations.
So here's how I view it.
Like, I feel like that's an easy, like, I feel like that's a fair.
And that is a fair connection to make, but I don't think it's a correct connection. And I wish I had, you guys can't see me because I've got visual aids with my two hands. So, you know, on the one hand, we've got everything that's happening, right? We've got, she can't fight. She's got flashbacks. She's got hallucinations. On the other hand, we have this poison that's physically inside her. It's hurting her physically. It's tearing up her muscles, and it's, in many cases, causing her not to fight. We've seen that happen. We saw that in this episode. We saw her fighting Toph. She couldn't do it. Toph said, yeah, you got metal in you. That's really messing you up. That's it. When we saw her unable to fight in Korra alone, she had a flashback to what happened before she got smacked around by the firebending White Lotus members. I think that's a good example of these being two very separate entities that are affecting her.
Okay, comment. So I think you bring up a good point in that the episode itself is very focused on Korra's physical recovery and gaining her fighting ability back. That's, like, almost entirely what's discussed, right? Like, Toph kind of turns this into a mental aspect, starts psychoanalyzing Korra dumbly, but for the most part, they are very focused upon Korra needs to get her,
and that's all Korra cares about.
Her fighting mojo back, right? That's what she says or something like
Which,
that.
Which, I could see this going in a way that, yeah, maybe it does work. Maybe she gets the poison out. Maybe she does get her fighting mojo back. She's still not. Yeah. She's still not better.
Right, so that being said, that's what the episode focuses on. It is, I believe, nearly impossible not to connect back to the episode we just saw. which is almost all about Korra's mental state and not her physical state. So I don't think, I think not only is it not unreasonable to connect the poison to the mental state, I believe it is almost impossible not to. Even if you then say, no, this episode is actually only talking about physical, at some point you are going to make this connection to the previous episode that just aired about Korra's mental state and maybe say, is the poison causing this as well?
Well, yeah. I'd like to clarify that, like, I agree, like, with every, like, all of your analysis, Mel, like, I agree with. I'm just afraid that that's not what we're going to get, like, in the later episodes.
And that's fine.
Like, it's really unclear.
I'm just going off of what we've seen right now. And but also, the other thing, too, that the point I made is that this is book four balance. I mean, the point here is that it's both physical and mental, and you're going to need both to
overcome be balanced it. As a person, yeah.
So, speaking of the fact that this B plot focuses on the physical aspect of Korra, I think this is, in general, there's two big problems with the B plot. One, Toph is terrible, a terrible person. Two, it's focused on Korra's physical problems and her physical recovery, which I don't really care about. Not after last episode. I am much more invested in her mentally, and I don't think this is an interesting thing to be focusing on right now.
Well, Mel brings up in her Tumblr post that everyone needs to read, and I had some, like, thoughts on how, like, the physicality, like, I actually, like, Mel and I discussed on Skype, and I actually kind of, like, changed my opinion a little bit about how Korra's physicality is, like, it's, like, versus Aang being spiritual. Like, all of his struggle was about him having to overcome, like, not overcome his spirituality, but, like, translate that into being more physical, like, with him learning firebending and earthbending. And Korra's whole struggle with it to be more spiritual because, like, she has to, like, of course her main focus is going to be her physicality. So it's, like, we need to address it. I don't think that should be the focus at all. But I do think it's important that, like, it was addressed. Like, that's why she went to Toph. It makes sense. Toph was the one who helped Aang, like, you have to think like an earthbender. You can't be Twinkle Toes. And then we have to have, like, in her helping Korra, like, realize that that's why Toph's so bad. Toph doesn't do well with spiritual things. And it's like, here, like, all I can do is beat you up. Go on. Like,
yeah.
Well, it's like, yeah, Toph helped Aang.
Like, I'm not saying, like, I wasn't trying to excuse. I was just saying, like,
it's like, yeah, Toph helped Aang, like, learn earthbending. Yeah, but I think it's interesting to think about if Toph replaces Katara in the beginning of the series. Aang, like, does not, like, get over it, right? Get over the genocide of his people in the beginning of the series. That's not a Toph's attitude would not be a good thing. Not only is it just not the right way to approach it, it's just actively bad. And that's kind of what we're seeing with Korra now.
Well, a lot of what Toph said, I thought paralleled a lot what Katara said in this season, which was, what did I write down? Like, because Katara's talking about it's all in her head. And, like, Toph does, like, she does mention it briefly, but I think Katara does, like, an obviously better job at mentioning that it's all in her head.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, it's interesting to show, like, the two different, like...
Old Katara's kind of looking at it, like, kind of objectively. It's interesting. Yeah. Kind of, a little bit compassionately, but it's more just, like, this is what I see as, like, a healer and stuff like that.
And, of course, Katara has a more vested interest in Korra than Toph does. Like, Katara helped train Korra, and, like, they lived in the same place.
Yeah, so there's more of a connection there. Yeah, but anyway. So the poison, I think going forward, what you need to see is... so, like, that being said, I think, well, I just had a thought, I'll get back to this soon, and that was 20 minutes ago. So back to Toph's line at the end here. When you want to get out, you can bend it out. I can't deal with all your issues for you. So this is, like, the only thing that Toph says that, like, is actually kind of okay. I can't deal with all your issues for you. This is, I don't know if this is that insensitive, saying I can't completely help you, right? Like, I think this is maybe a realistic way to approach it that's not super harsh.
It totally is.
I mean, of course she's saying it harshly, but she's not saying it super fine, but... it's a way that isn't as bad as the other thing she says, and maybe is okay or slightly good. I can't deal with everything for you. You have to. It's ultimately up to you. When you want it out, you can bend it out. So this is obviously, like, this metaphor of the poison for the mental stuff coming back in. But I do like the concept, at the very least, of Korra having to do it herself. She needs to solve this for her. That being said, you do need support from other people. which Toph isn't providing.
And we don't want another lion turtle.
Yeah, so it's not clear how...
People!
Cora, it's people don't get over these things. You can't really get over them yourself. I mean, you can, but it'd be good, ideally...
It's harder than she's making it.
It'd be ideally to have people there for you, to support you in what you're going, to not say things like Toph is saying, and instead to be... to help in any way you can. Obviously, you can't. They can't do everything or even most things, but to just help and be there for the person.
This is
and
why Asami needs to be around.
Yes.
Cora doesn't have anyone there for her right now. But
Asami's there in spirit.
Well, and it's interesting that Cora, she ran away from it all. And like, she had to be guided by the spirit too. So I'm just curious as to how that's going to change for her to like have someone help her. Or not help her.
Well, it's interesting because... So you mentioned that she ran away, for lack of a better term, from the spirit, from all this stuff, and she needs help. You know, that dog spirit showed up, barked at that thing a few times, and it went away.
Yeah.
I feel like that was a much more poignant moment than, I don't know if you guys discussed it or not, but that was a much more poignant moment than now looking at this stuff than maybe people...
Yeah, I don't think I really realized it as much during the episode, but that's a good representation of support and someone being there for you. And I do think actually that spirit is support for Cora and is.
I hope they bring him back.
Toph mentioned it, so I'm curious if the next episode we will see Cora talking to the spirit.
Yeah, the spirit, aka Little Cutie.
Yes.
AKA that's also what Cora calls.
Is that what we're calling?
AKA
him?
That's also what Cora calls Asami, but that's okay.
Yeah,
that's what she is in her phone.
So yeah. I think that's in her phone, yeah. So I think that's a good discussion.
That was much less aggressive than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I guess Mel's wasn't representing what I thought
you
was,
were like,
so.
I'm sorry,
did you,
I'm
what you think I was gonna
you?
Say?
I don't know. That was I feel like your post is a little bit misleading for your viewpoints. I will say that.
Hey Mel, I didn't mean to steal your thunder about the physicality thing, and
I don't care.
Sorry, I was stretching.
I
don't care.
I don't give a... Yeah, that's what you say. Okay.
Whoa.
So, the last two things in the episode, and we'll get into this more with questions. We're going to go over 2 hours, obviously. So, there's two little hooks at the end of what's to come. So, we see Tenzin assigning the duty of finding Cora to the Air Kids.
That should have been their first... The second that they found out she wasn't there, I feel like that should have been priority number one.
Yeah.
I agree.
Not wait until things went from bad to worse and then be like,
I know,
oh,
for real. That's
let's
what
wait
I'm
until
thinking.
The last possible moment to go try.
Yeah,
and
I do feel like that was a huge weak spot of the episode, was really? Me not seeing anyone care that Cora's missing. Like, apart from
Cora's
yeah.
gone.
Like, yeah, she's your friend, and you should really care that your friend's missing, but also the avatar's missing.
Also, she's the avatar.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Can we get on that?
I'm going to go off on Janora not talking a little bit here. Janora's role is... I'm just prefacing that with this is what's
going to happen.
No, good.
Happen. I mean, I'm...
So Janora's role for the first three episodes has been diminished to a minor, like, tertiary character after being perhaps the most prominent supporting secondary character in the entire show in the previous two seasons. She hasn't said a line in three episodes. Kieran and Shipka has not been in the credits. Here, she's been relegated to a clear minor supporting cast in having her role be equal to that of Milo and Iki. Early on in Korra, around book two, the writers made a decision that Janora was the most prominent to the storyline of the three Air Kids. They actively made a decision that Milo and Iki do not matter as much. And it was, and we saw the result of that in books three, in books two and three. Iki didn't really talk at all besides her tea party thing with Tenzin in book two. And Milo just makes funny comments time to time. Whereas Janora has been promoted to a major character, having a entire plotline to herself. The last scene of the season, Ko she shares with Cora, has a love interest, and at the end is promoted to a significant member within the mythology of the show. So now here she is being relegated back to her season one position of just a member of the Air Kids. So this is problematic on two levels. One is it doesn't make sense within the new state of the show why Janora would just be sitting there with Tenzin, not really doing anything, not really shown doing any master stuff, not really an active member of the new Airbenders. So it just doesn't make sense logically within the mythology of the show. Two, she is now, it doesn't make sense that she has been relegated to this position given her prominence that was gained in the previous two seasons. Now, you could view this as, oh, they're just making Iki and Mila more important now, but that's not really true because they still haven't said that much either. But bringing Jinora down to their level doesn't really make sense with her current state of character. I think it's possible that they'd said in book three, okay, Jinora's storyline is finished now, so now she's just going to be more of a side character, which is what I thought they were doing with Kai, actually. But the reality is they have a fourth season, and they have to do something with Jinora now because they've set her up for two seasons as being a big sympathetic character. And instead, she hasn't talked, and she's going on a quote-unquote important mission now, except it is shared with her two much less important to the story siblings. And this isn't really gaining her position, although theoretically she will at least talk next episode.
Hopefully.
She definitely won't.
Well, I'd like to hope that... I mean, and even like her being a leader, it'd be different if he wasn't sending his kids, if he was sending Jinora and two other airbenders, because then Jinora would be in charge. Now it's just going to be her fighting with her siblings.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not going to listen to her, because, like, it doesn't matter how much...
I kind of feel like that's why that's why he sent her with them, because she's, like, the master
now. It's like
now.
What Katara did to her kids.
Yeah, I mean...
Send you to get along by going to do something incredibly important.
You need to get alone and leave me the hell alone.
So obviously there's bigger problems at work than Jinora's prominence
in
the show.
I'm just worried that it's going to be a sibling thing and not us actually having Jinora doing something.
She seemingly doesn't have a role in the plot right now, right? Like, despite this isn't a thing, a Jinora plotline. This is a Air Kids plotline.
Yeah.
She traded her voice for arrows.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Like Ariel.
Yes, thanks for clarifying.
Who else sold their voice? Nobody.
I don't know. I don't think everyone instantly thinks Little Mermaid on the top of their heads the entire time. Anyway, I'm upset about her. That being said, we saw more of her in the scene, and that was good. Okay.
She could have talked. She said
she could have talked. Yeah, I'm concerned.
She could have, bashed Milo.
I'm concerned that they were like filming Mad Men at the same time as they're recording this season. Like, I'm starting to get concerned that Kieran and Chip isn't even here. But
she's just there a
was
mute.
There was tweets, I think, of people recording with her for book four. So I think that's not true.
Was there really?
Someone was like, I'm recording with Janet Varney and the little girl from Mad Men. Right. So there's one of the like guest stars or something. So, and I think that was for book four. So I believe she'll be here and hopefully talk next episode. Okay. The next thing is, the last thing in the episode,
I'm so pissed off.
I am just no Jinora equals depressed. Dylan, so Varric and Kuvira in the final scene, the most intriguing scene, I believe, of the entire episode. Varric has taken the spirit vine from before and has it in a machine, and Kuvira says that this is the most important. You're like soul focus and the most important technological, something like that. That's going on. I didn't put her line in the outline, but he's working in the lab with the spirit vine from earlier. Ooh.
Or something.
Yep.
This will change everything.
Did she say that?
Yeah. He said it at the end.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Jeff, let me read some comments on this, then I can just... Jeff says, and I'll read his other comments in a little bit. Obviously, the trailer scene with Varric has spirit vine power cell things in the background, as we brought up in the trailer discussion. And as is prominent here, are they to be actual energy cells that draw power from the spirit world, damaging it in the process? Will Korra have to close the portals again to stop them from functioning? Will they be used to supercharge the mechs? And then we have an ask about this as well, if I can find it. Ikuvira says, what do you think Varric's plan is for using the spirit vines? My guess is that he is either going to retract the spiritual energy that is in them, which he will use to power the mecha tanks, or somehow being in control of the energy in them that he can somehow manipulate so he can move them around, etc. So actually, Ikuvira and Jeff have the same thought, is using this as an energy source from the spirit world, which is really interesting. So I think Jeff's most... interesting part of that was they draw powerful power from the spirit world, damaging it in the process. I think this gels with something that they haven't really gotten to yet, which is the conflict between the spirit world and the new technological innovation in the physical world. So that would like be a direct conflict of those two.
Because we've seen how the spirit world has like damaged the physical world. I like, you know, the vines everywhere. I use damaged very loosely, but you know, at some point there has to be the spiritual world damaging the physical world, damaging the spiritual world.
Yeah, and that could turn into the main plotline of the season too, pretty easily. Which we thought that's what would happen in book three. I think preseason.
We also thought that's what would happen in book two.
In book two, yeah, which it kind of did.
Oops. But,
Other possibilities include this being a weapon, like a bomb.
It's more likely to be a weapon.
Or something else.
I don't think it's going to be a weapon. I think she's trying to get it like to use for something that won't like destroy things. It's... Like, not a bomb. Dylan, you said it might be a bomb.
I think Britt was saying that in chat, something like that. Happy birthday, by the way, to Britt.
Yeah. Oh, wait, we have to sing.
Yeah, we have to sing.
We're not singing, but happy birthday to Britt. Okay, so... So I think this is interesting to see what they're going to do with... Good job, guys. Whether this is going to be just, like, an interesting side plot, or if this is going to, like, blossom into the main...
It'll probably show up in the finale. Will be in the finale.
Well, so if you think about what's their main power source right now in this world?
Electricity.
Bending, yeah. So at this point in time in their life pretty much has to be plugged into something.
So this should be like actual sustainable energy for their world.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Applying this to Zathu, which is already really futuristic with all the metal stuff they do, is really interesting.
And Kuvira said, like, she's all about technological advancements and
stuff. Yeah, she does say that.
That was in her speech.
I'm all about computers and seeing...
I'm all about that.
Is Kuvira on Tumblr? Does she have a Tumblr?
She is on Tumblr.
Yeah. She's all about the...
There's a lot of Tumblrs for Kuvira.
There are a lot of...
Including
the
Kuvira.
They're out there. They're mingling.
Okay. So I think that's going to be an interesting plotline to watch. Okay. Let's, so this isn't that important relative to some other discussions we've had, but let's grade the episode pretty quickly. So I graded out of 10. 5 is an average episode of television. 10 is the best episode of television you've seen. And give me just a brief explanation of what's your grade and why. Let's start with Mel.
I'm going to go with a 7.9 because that might be low. I'll give it a solid 8.0. Well, 7.99 repeating. Because I do think it was better than a lot of people. Well, everyone's first reaction upon rewatch. I think it ended up a lot better. I don't think it's good enough to get into the 8 range. I think it worked very well. I think every scene worked well in what it was trying to do. There was dialogue issues, but the big thing when I look at an episode is like I use Sid Field's view on screenplays, where if a scene's not giving you information or furthering the plot, then it's useless. And there was no scene in here where I thought was not doing either of those things. So I'm gonna stick to my 7.9 with a line over it.
Okay, which is mathematically equivalent to 8, as we discussed last podcast.
No, it's not.
Something of note with Jeff just private messaged me. The version of the episode that went up on Nick.com is now in the correct frame rate for this episode. Previously, they're using a 30 frames per second frame rate, and they lowered it to a 24 frames per second one, which is the one they use on Amazon and stuff. This will make our screenshots not have blurry things in them, which isn't our fault. If you look at the DF screenshots, they sometimes blur and stuff, but that's actually the Nick uploading them in a bad frame rate. So maybe they actually figured out what they're doing, says Jeff, so that's cool. Allie, out of 10, and why?
6.8.
Wow.
Jeez.
That's low.
No, I'm gonna stick with this because I mean I did like it, and again I liked it better the more times I watched it, but I still did have issues with just stuff with dialogue. And after listening and not really participating in that conversation you guys had about Korra and the poison and all that, I have to see what they're gonna do with it in the, like, later episodes. If they really just make it, like, a the poison was the only thing, and now she's totally fine. I'm going to be really upset. So I'm holding my judgment on that. But, I mean, I enjoyed it. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was the first time around. So,
6.8.
Listen, okay?
Delaney.
Well, I'm slightly more prepared today. I'm going to give it a 7.9, but not repeating, because I don't want it to be equivalent to an 8. But I really enjoyed the episode. Of course, you know, I had issues with it, but I just really, like Mel said, like, there wasn't really a scene that I thought was unnecessary, or, like, I just really enjoyed every part. Even, there was so much Mako, and I still really enjoyed the episode. It was just a good episode.
Oh, I know why I didn't give it a 7. There's no Asami.
Okay, that's fair. I can respect that. And
no, don't snort at me, okay?
And this episode brought up a lot of important things that I can't wait to explore, and I'm hoping go in a way that I'm not expecting. Yes, that I'm not expecting, and I'm just excited, and also a little bit worried, which is a good thing too.
A whole new world.
Because I was interested. Yes.
All right. Dylan. Wait, what grade did you give it? I don't remember.
It was 7. Thanks, Dylan, for listening. 7.9.
I would like to make the distinction that mine is not equivalent to an 8.
Okay, well, I guess I'll give it the highest grade then. I'll give it an 8. That's funny because I'm the most harsh on this. So this type of episode is really conflicting to me because something happens in it which is morally challenging.
Dylan, I feel like you don't consider your own grading when you're
grading. I think I'm very consistent. I'm aware of what my 8 means. Like, so I'm going to compare this to the sexism in season 2. Things that are morally bad, that, like, this episode, I feel like, presents morally bad things about representations of mental illness, as discussed extensively in the previous 2 hours, really does not sit well, obviously, with me. There are things it does at the end to maybe mitigate that, but it's also a wait-and-see type thing, so I think this is a variable grade. And I also should say that my 9.9, which I gave Cora alone last week, is now very much sitting in flux because of where they will go with Cora's mental plotline. Yes, I do think the grade of that episode will depend on where they take her plotline. But for now, I'm going to assume that they're going to ultimately say the poison is only having physical effects, and that Cora is going to go on a great journey to resolve this with support from the spirit, with Zuko, with Honora, everyone.
Okay, wait, we need to talk about the person they should be sending out to find her is Zuko.
Zuko, you need to capture the Avatar. Yeah. Which doesn't make sense.
He would be the one to find her.
But yes. So I'm assuming everything's going to go well there. I actually really liked the A plot. Like, I don't understand why they're focusing on Wu, but I thought that his characterization is great. Like, I'm pretty into it. And Dylan's Cora sympathy farewell tour continues with an 8 for this episode.
Farewell tour.
And the humor was so good this episode, I thought.
You've heard that before.
I said that on the first podcast.
Yeah, I have not.
You didn't listen to the first podcast then, obviously.
I've never listened to the first one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow. That's a reaction to have.
Wow, yeah.
No, because he's going
to
be like...
Allie getting very offended at us implying that you would listen to the podcast.
How dare you? No, I'm not going to lose.
Okay.
I'm never going to listen to the first
So now let's work our way through the thoughts and asks that I didn't get to.
The very first one would be such a...
It's the 401.
No, this one.
Episode 401, the podcast on that one.
Not 5 years ago.
So I've read most of Sam's thoughts. I'll read the ones that I haven't read. So the episode majorly focused on Wu, Mako, Kuvira, which makes sense since it's called The Coronation. I don't feel as invested in this plot, I guess, though it's only a matter of time before Korra's plot and this plot smash into each other. I like the scene between Mako and Bolin in the hall. I like that we took the time to have that conversation with no music. I feel like, I guess it was the A-plot of the show, was all Sur's conversation, pretty much, which kind of dragged it down. Eska's appearance was cool. Wu's hissy fit in Act 3 was really interesting / good, I think. It brought a lot of depth to his character, as much depth as an airhead dude such as him can have. I also think he's in love with Mako, but that's just me. Not just you. It's also us.
Sam. It's also everybody else.
It's everyone.
And Sam says Kuvira's a bad something and is going to kill everyone.
Accurate.
So I read that paragraph.
Yeah.
We all know.
That's wrong.
That
song.
Read this paragraph. Sam says, mentioned something about the importance of representation in media and why she feels like this is an important issue that shouldn't be quickly fixed about mental illness. I agree. Important representation. Wow, Alan, thank you.
I'm tired.
Sam says she's giving it a 6.6 out of 10. It was good. Seeing Toph was good, and seeing Toph was nice, but it could have been way better. All right, Jeff's thoughts. So I basically called the gauntlet being thrown down during the coronation 2 weeks ago. Smiley face, says Jeff. Okay, smiley face. The musical the musical opening was actually pretty majestic.
It was.
Was that Julie's second line in the entire series? Yeah, it's not. Yeah, I think
Wait,
so.
Wait, what was her first?
She said she did. She said like sir or something like that before. Like
sir.
something, sir. Like,
excuse me, sir.
Jeff says, Honora and Janora will never speak. True. I loved every single one of Toph lines. Well, I completely disagree with that. Kuvira's interaction with Wu in the hotel lobby, gold star. Agree. I really like that scene. New prediction, Wu's obviously not going to roll over. Why else would he need to be smuggled out of Republic City in a box on a train? I'm thinking he does... turnaround, starts volunteering in soup kitchens, trying to be a potential leader. Mako changes his opinion of him. Kuvira supporters keep sabotaging his efforts, though, and eventually grow so brazen they drive him from Republic City. That seems like way too minor of a plot line.
I don't feel like he wants to be a leader, though, is the thing.
It is a good point, though. He is seemingly being smuggled out of Republic City shot in the trailer, so that's interesting. Back to Jeff. Bolin telling Mako and Kuvira... and that Kuvira is basically like Korra was, in my opinion, an example of tell, not show, as opposed to the ideal of show, not tell device. I'm not seeing ample evidence that they are cut from the same cloth, so to speak. So Bolin stating it in exposition felt forced. Agree, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think we've seen enough of Kuvira to compare it to Korra. Although it is worth
seeing three episodes.
It is worth noting that Bolin, like, personally... seems like it's like latching on to Kuvira because she's like Korra. I think that's interesting.
Like for his character, it makes sense.
Yeah, but I think
I disagree. I feel like at this point we could make that, but that's a huge discussion. So I don't. But I disagree. I think it's entirely entirely relevant to say that Kuvira's like Korra because she is.
I think that it is sometimes awkward to like say things that you're trying to show though. Like,
well, yeah, I don't disagree with that, but I don't think it's out of place or too early to say that.
Okay. I'm not sure yet, I guess. Bolin needs to convince himself that he's on the right track, sticking with Kuvira. So the only way to do that is for Mako to be in the wrong. I'm thinking on the right track. I'm thinking this is one possible application of the stated season theme of forgiveness. Yeah, I think Bolin and Mako are going to have some sort of forgiveness thing going on. Definitely.
This always happens at least one time in a season. With
yeah, no, these two literally, yes. I'm done with
it's
this.
It's really annoying.
Same.
Like everyone
them being
oh.
on opposite sides of history. Like I'm done with it.
Like everyone is like, oh, it's so sad. I want them to, like, you know, and I'm just like, I don't care. Like
maybe it's because naturally, and this, I just naturally don't jive well with brother stories for whatever reason. It's not that I dislike them, but they mean nothing to me.
And
probably
I have a brother,
probably because I'm a girl, and I just can't relate to that at all. But I can't deal with them their brother subplot repeating itself every season.
Bolin's development wasn't like didn't depend on everything.
I
with
know
Mako. That's
it
all
really
I want. Like Bolin, be your own person, please.
So commenting on Mel. I am a male who has a brother, and I also do not find brother stories very interesting. I think this they're a product of the patriarchy and just like
I don't even
being,
find sister
being like
stories
just I think no, but
Frozen.
Just things are like very
okay, except for Frozen.
We're always like very focused on brothers in shows, and it's just such a male dominated thing.
Yeah, that is something that I never ever jived with. Just ever. I find them incredibly
Since we discussed Survivor today, in Survivor, they always care about the brother, in the blood versus water season, they always care about the pairs of brothers a lot. And turns out they're just these super attractive white guys,
well,
and who cares? Like,
if you go back in history, the original epic story was about essentially a brother story. Gilgamesh and Enkidu, essentially the first, they're quote unquote brothers. So that's our mold.
Which is interesting. It's interesting because that was closer to a time that was not patriarchal, but probably still at the beginning of a patriarchal.
Gilgamesh, you have to thank for the patriarchy.
No, yeah, but the start of civilization, the start of the patriarchy, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's what I found so compelling about Avatar growing up, is because I have a younger brother, and like that kind of like relationship, brother versus sister, like
That
was great. Like in Avatar, like I enjoyed that. I mean, like in Korra, it's like I'm tired of the boys. Can we like do we have? Does everything have to be about men? And then the brother-brother relationship is just so.
Which is why I enjoyed Tenzin, Bumi, and Kaya, because it was all three of them going at each other.
And we should say that Book 3 of Korra was much less male-dominated. Like, less. And this season continued. This season is a little bit male-dominated so far, because we're focusing on Wu and the world leaders a lot, who are mostly male. But Kuvira being the main villain is a lot, helping a lot. So that's good. So let's continue with Jeff's
thoughts. What isn't helping? Asami not being there.
That's true.
Yes.
Jeff says, props to Mako for not belittling Wu to Bolin when he very well could have. He did a little bit, but yeah, not that much. Jeff says,
that much, and I was surprised at that, actually. I'm happy that.
At 1822 in the episode, oopsie on the animator's part, Mako's missing his spill.
I was like, what?
I was so annoyed. I was like, did he
eat it? He burned it off.
Then he had it again.
But then it reappears.
He didn't burn it off well enough.
Jeff says, I love how there's still poison inside Korra. I did not see that coming. It contrasts with Aang's spiritual purification with Gurupatik, in that there's never anything tangible about his progress. One moment he was struggling, the next he made peace with himself and was fine. Korra has a physical manifestation, but it's tied to her mental state, so it's not easy. Not as easy plot-wise as having Toph just bend it out of her. So it's interesting Jeff identified that as well as being a physical manifestation of Korra's mental things. Like, that's not something I would expect him to identify, but it's he sees it as a positive, whereas I think I'm taking it as a negative. Not super unexpected, but I won't comment further. Obviously, the trailer scene with Varric has... Oh, yeah, I never read that part. Okay. So I read that email. Let's read some of Greg Serafin's thoughts, who is runs SensibleReason.com and is awesome. I want to read about gender roles and LGBT. He like categorized his email for me, which is really helpful.
That's great.
He says, I said I might not have time to read it before, so then he categorized it, which is great. I find it interesting that Mako refers to Kuvira as emperor and not empress. Also, the affectionate way Wu talks about Mako in his hotel room. I really like this relationship, and since there are no LGBT characters or even that concept in this world, it really allows them to portray an affectionate relationship between two men without having in-universe issues or questions about the relationship's potential impropriety, especially since a same-sex relationship with a king who needs to produce a viable hire would be seen as especially taboo. It's hard to tell if Mako really cares for Wu in the same way and is just hiding it because Mako's not good with his feelings, or that he takes his job really seriously, which he's always done. I feel it is a mix of both. So that's interesting.
Do you ship it?
Do what?
Does he ship it?
This is not Jeff, if you said Jeff.
Oh, just kidding.
This is Greg. I very clearly stated that. And
I'm sorry. Okay.
Jeff would not talk about this stuff. And
I know, that's why I was surprised.
Yeah, so I don't know if I get the impression that Mako has any sort of feelings there.
I don't think so. Yeah, I don't think he does.
I think he's just less irritated in this episode.
He does seem like he has some... I feel like some semblance of friendship for Oru. I feel like I get that.
He went along with the smoothie day.
Maybe he has sympathy for him.
Yeah.
And he felt the need to tell, like, he felt bad for him.
Yeah.
Another thing Greg says, I'm okay with the fact that Wu has become comedic relief and Bolin is now a real and serious character.
Oh, me too. Mm.
But I don't like that Wu wanted to to solve him being overthrown by going shopping.
Bolin is real and serious right now. Though.
Even when Bolin would make inappropriate jokes, he would bring it back to reality, understanding that it was a serious situation. Wu seems incapable of doing that. Wu really seems like he is losing it.
Wu actually got pretty mature by the end of the
episode. But it is true that he like responded really weirdly to situations, like with his... Anyway, but that was an interesting thing you were saying, Blaney. Like, why do you don't think Bolin is like a serious character now?
No, I mean, all of a sudden I don't think he's very serious. He's just, everything he said in this episode was he was just asking questions the audience had.
I mean, like, at least just, he's not making stupid remarks and everything.
I mean, I agree, but I don't think he's suddenly serious. He's more serious than he was before. I'm still not pleased with the
Lin's
character.
I just don't want him to be, like, comic relief, and I'm glad they have Wu for that. But I don't feel like he's going to be comic relief either now after this. At least not as much as I thought he was going to be.
I just don't think there's been, like, this sudden, like, I don't think it's that obvious of a change. Like, he's just... Bolin hasn't really said any... Well, the most important thing he said was when he was talking to Mako and, like, defending Kuvira. But he really just repeated what Kuvira said, so...
Removing Bolin from this Avatar, Team Avatar group dynamic, he isn't relegated to the snarky comedic relief line position anymore. That being said, he doesn't really have a prominent role otherwise, either. I mean, in this episode, I think he's a
prominent
role.
Well, we don't know yet.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I just
hope
we get more with Bolin, yes.
Let's do other things, and then if we don't go super long, we'll go. Well, I'll come back to it if we have time. Okay. Nick Pick says, do you all think Korra will have to confront Zaheer in some way before she can remove the poison? Before the season started, I thought Zaheer was gone for good, but all these flashes seem to imply that he is directly linked to her inability to remove the metal from her body.
I think maybe she'll confront Spirit Zaheer of her mind.
I think that scene from the trailer where she and Mako, like, have this huge door opening to them, I still think that's Zaheer's prison. And maybe she'll go there and be like, hey, you're messing
up my
mind.
I don't think anything would be solved by going to him, though.
That's why.
I don't think it would be solved, but I feel like she would...
I think it would honestly make it worse.
Yeah.
I think it would be, like, a thing where, like, where Zuko goes to Ozai at the end of Avatar and, like, tries to get something out of him. I don't know what, but maybe. Well, I mean, yeah. It worked out in a way.
I don't think he has the answer, though. I mean, I honestly see no scenario where going to see Zaheer would have a point.
I don't think going to Zaheer would help remove the poison. But it might help Korra confront her trauma.
That's what I'm thinking. Not with the poison, but it will help
maybe.
Her confront
Maybe. I'm not sure. It's a personal thing, and we don't really know.
I feel like it's more deep-rooted than just Zaheer, though.
I definitely agree, but maybe she thinks that'll be an answer, even if it doesn't actually help, you know.
Fair enough.
Show Knight, who is awesome on Tumblr, says, What was that episode? It is like Mike and Brian want Wuko to happen. Not that I'm complaining. This ship is hilarious. I agree. It's hilarious and great.
I agree.
Yes. I agree. What was that episode? Why did they focus on Wu and his dynamic with Mako for most of it? That's so weird.
It was Wuko the episode.
It worked, though.
It did. I think it did work, yeah. Anonymous says, so Kuvira has some good points about absolute monarchies based solely on lineage. See Ozai/Unalaq. But since I doubt the Earth Empire will last through the end of the series, A, what would you like to see replace it as a body of governance? Personally, I prefer presidents over kings. And B, will this change in government affect other nations? Basically, do you think they will become democratic or remain monarchies?
That's complicated.
I'm not convinced we'll, like, see the resulting political situation at the end of the series. I think we would be much in some sort of epilogue. Like, I think we'd be much more likely to focus on characters rather than, oh, look, Ba Sing Se is a democracy now, and we're going out to vote for the first time. Although that is how they could phrase it. Like, it's voting day in Ba Sing Se.
That's interesting, though, because it's called the Earth Kingdom. Like, that's been its name the entire time. And
so, well, now it's, Earth well, Empire. now it's the Earth Empire, yeah, but apparently... But
yeah, but it's not.
It would be funny if they don't... It'd be interesting if they don't go back to the Earth Kingdom after the Earth Empire. They'd now be like the people's democracy of the Earth King, right? Of Earth Bending. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
People's Democratic Republic of the Earth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, okay. I don't even think I want to know, like, at all. Like,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it matters. I don't think the point here is this body of government is better than others. I think the point here is that freedom.
Like, I don't necessarily like the idea of being like, everyone have a democracy. Like, I don't feel like that's not something we need to have in Avatar. Like, isn't necessarily something that needs to be, that doesn't need to be the main focus.
Yeah, I don't think they're pushing any political agendas. Showing chaos.
Yeah.
Thanks, Batu. I agree that Mike and Brian probably don't want to, like, show favor to political system. I also feel like, actually, now that I say, like, I was like, I don't think the epilogue's going to be voting day and Bossing Day, but now I'm like, yeah, like, totally, it could be what it would be. That is something they would do.
I just kind of don't want to see it. Like, I just kind of want to have the conflict, and I don't necessarily, like, need to see the results, if that makes
it's
sense.
It's like a dream of spring. You don't need to see the end of the war with the White Walkers.
Yes.
We already read something from Chewing Gal, so you kind of already know these feelings. But she asks, or she says, am I the only one that's really angry at Toph? She was in character, but at the same time, I kind of wanted to punch her in the face for her abusive treatment of Korra. If she knew what was going on with Sue and Lin, she would have to know that Korra almost died. Also, I don't really like how leftover Mercury is the explanation for her decreased fighting ability. They were playing it up as something psychological. So we discussed that extensively.
Yeah.
It is true. She probably... One excuse you could give Toph is, well, she doesn't know Korra's stuff's going on with Korra. But at the same time, if she sees everything that's happening in the world, she probably knows.
She says, I see everything.
So Toph's literally saying she's omniscient, right? So
yeah, like she literally said, I see everything.
So is Toph God?
Yes. Interesting. Something to think about.
Something to consider.
Commissioner Gorgon. We already read that one. He's also here, she, or they. It's also awesome. Sorry about pronouns, by the way. I don't really know how to approach this. Not sure what pronouns people prefer when they send in stuff, and sometimes I make assumptions, and I apologize if they're ever wrong. Another anonymous says, would the Toph scenes have been better if they were reorganized? There's no reason Toph should wait to mention that there's still poison in Korra's body. Waiting until after a day of beating her up just makes Toph look like a jerk. I'm not sure she sounds enlightened either. Her insight to being police chief does relate to the Avatar's endless mission, and she provides honest words, but the execution makes it hard to swallow. Yes. She literally waited a day before.
I feel like that's in character for Toph. Like, oh, by the way. Like, that to me, that was like the most in-character thing, was like, oh, by the way, you have poison, didn't you know? Like, to me, I thought that was, like, pretty in-character.
Yeah, I agree, although it was just very jerky. By the way, sorry if I have background noise, literally a lawnmower outside my window.
If you have background noise.
Can't really do anything about that. The joys of living in an apartment above stuff happening.
I like how you say if, as if we can't hear it.
I mean, I don't know, it's my end, so.
It's very loud.
Okay, well, I apologize. Esta best blog without Val. What?
Holy
ES-DA-BSD-BLG sends and asks, oh my golly gosh, what happened? The Korra and Toph parts were terrible and everything else was amazing. The conflict between Bolin and Mako was great. The best line ever was found in the episode, go woo, woo. If there's an easy fix to Korra's poisoning, that would bother me so much. Dylan... Quirt being a controlling... Oh, this is getting negative. A controlling meanie. Stop being such a jerk to Allie. Do you think that Korra will still have... Why did you throw that in between Korra thoughts? Just
Allie,
to, like, trick...
Because
she...
Just to trick, just to trick me into reading it.
That do you think... he or she would force you to read it.
Do you think I that Korra you. Will what still have some healing to do after the... the convenient bits of Deus Ex Metals are removed. Deus Ex Metals. Oh, I don't think they are, but that's hilarious. And am I the only one who was bothered by how one-dimensioned Toph was written? She was so rough and mean for no reason. She wasn't trying to be helpful at all. Was that
who
line?
Is this person?
What was the line about how Korra needs to not think when she probably already knew what the problem was? She wasn't being helpful at all. They made one of the most likable characters in Avatar a bad word. She didn't try to help Korra get back to fighting strength at all, and was all it did was push her on and make fun of her. Yeah, so I think this person really did just include the Dylan hate line in the middle of thoughts to make me read.
You do need to be nice to me. You wonder why I'm a tsundere all the time.
Yeah, wow. Well, so soon is the best blog. Soon. Okay, so yeah.
Okay,
Toph is a jerk. We agree. So let's see. Am I missing any?
To the defend your honor, God.
Since we're already this long, I guess let's finish reading Greg's thoughts from earlier. For the amazing military tactician that Kuvira supposedly is, it seems like a terrible strategy to announce that you're not going to give up power on foreign soil where the United Republic could just easily take you out. And then after that, not leaving right away or having your troops invade, why wouldn't the United Forces just take her out while she's not protected by all of her troops on her military train? Seems like terrible strategy. Len and her metal benders are standing right there. Also a way to throw Suyin under the bus. Even after all of that, they just chill in the same hotel, like they haven't just crossed every world leader and technically overthrown the king at his own coronation, which the world leaders have spent three years to put into place. Though it seems like Su was wrong to not want to help stabilize the Earth Kingdom.
The hotel has nice mini bars. I feel like the Kuvira doing what she did and not taking off right after is her way of essentially proving to herself and everyone else that she has legitimacy. Because if she said that and then ran off to go do other things, that would have looked awful for her and what she's trying to do. So I see her sticking around because she's basically sitting there saying, this is the Earth Empire. I'm president. Like, this is happening. This is legitimate. I'm not going to run away. As for the others not doing anything, I think it was, well, it probably wasn't a shock to anyone, but I see why they didn't just start attacking her on stage in the middle of a coronation. Like, they went about it, like, a pretty typical way, I feel like, in a pretty smart way. I mean, they talked about it, and they sent the, probably, Sue is the most likely candidate to go talk to her, because Sue knows her, and she's from Sue's town, so.
It was handled in a very realistic way. Like, what was displayed on screen was what, like, happens in real life. And it, like, if they couldn't have attacked her, that also would have shown, that wouldn't have given any legitimacy to Wu.
Those
people were cheering. You're not going to attack her in the middle of that.
No, I don't think this was realistic. I think you totally could have. Like, you're assuming.
Do you know what happens when you do that? World War One happens.
Yes.
You're assuming that, that Republic City is like this completely stabilized, civilized, like it is. But like at the same time, if you just kill Kuvira on the stage, everything's solved because there's a power vacuum which can't be filled.
That's not how world leadership works.
I understand, but in this case, like she's such a sole dictator.
Dylan, what is a power vacuum? Whether for bad or for worse, she has control right now. If you kill her, that's going to just
That is an interesting point. We're saying that Tenzin and especially Reika would prefer her in charge than no one in charge.
Yeah,
which I think is a valid point.
She has the military. Like, if she goes down, her troops will rise up.
I don't agree with that. I don't think they would unite.
Right now, it's safer to keep her there because they have a good idea of what she's going to do. They probably think they can talk to her.
I think
that away, then you're leaving that open for, you know, who knows what to come in.
Yeah, I think that point's maybe valid. I don't agree that her troops would rise up under her.
Well, what I'm saying is that Kuvira goes down, you go through the ranks, the military, who would step up next?
Batar Jr.
Yeah, see, but I think she's such a like single-handed.
Well, like I will say, it is a cult of personality, but then at the same time, it's not, because I do think if they killed Kuvira, like that wouldn't solve anything, it would make it 10 times worse, and because you would just have the next person in line step up.
I will say that it from the perspective that she's like an enemy, it seems realistic, but I think maybe when you like analyze it more, it becomes interesting. I think that's a good place to end, because that was actually something that was a good point, Greg. That's something I thought of the first time I was watching. It seemed weird to have her just seize this power so vulnerable, but at the same, you also have to factor in that she can defend herself, and she's a really talented bender. Okay,
yeah, like, if they were to attack, like nothing would happen. Good would happen.
Seems like it. Once you think about it some more. Okay, I think that's good. Oh my god, did I miss anything? No. I don't think so. So
dear
let
God, I hope not.
Dear God, dear I God. Hope not has been called. Okay. Let's wrap things up if this credits will open. Thank you, Word, for not clicking the hyperlink and it opening. Oh no, it's just Dr. Fang isn't opening. Okay. I've been your main host, Dylan. Those have been Mel, Allie, and Delaney. Tech director AJ Kevin Jeff, music's by credits to the Yoshida brothers, Luke Tripp and Jeremy Zuckerman. I'm doing this off the top of my head. Stuff I edit host, Don Wufang's owned by Jake. Contributors. Ooh, I don't have it up. Can I remember it?
I can read it right now.
Oh, it's up. Garrett Sierra, Nick
Mel, you can't do it.
Devin
the host.
And Lexi. Devin, Lexi, Rudy. What? Oh no! Now I'm mixing.
You missed like everyone.
Okay, you read the contributors like list.
It's G Money Sierra.
No, no, no! Not the nicknames. The real one. The real names. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. So Garrett, Sierra, Nick. Was her name just Rudy? And we added to
Devin and no Devin and Lexi. Yeah. Colin, Gretchen, Brit.
Fetchin. Zyro.
I forget his real name. He's always Zyro, though, so he can be known as Zyro. And no, there it is. Nathan and special contributor Gareth. And thanks to Jamie for donating. Who wants to be? Mm-hmm. Who wants their nickname to be J Nora? So
okay, that's cool.
Nice.
You can nickname
See,
yourself.
I'm telling
I guess.
You, this nickname Wait. Thing was a good marketing.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Thank you very
like
much,
that.
Jamie. And
even though we usually don't let people pick, J Nora is so good.
J Nora is pretty good. It's pretty good. Okay.
I don't even know what this is.
Anyway, info.
They're giving us money.
I know, but like, okay.
Info on Dongwu Fang and us. That's loud. This lawnmower right now. I'll talk over it.
You yell out your window.
No.
Shut up.
I'd be like, can you stop mowing for 2 minutes?
So
please?
The thing that is most important if you
trying
are
to run a podcast
unfamiliar here. with us and stuff is you need to be following the Dongwu Fang Tumblr. Dongwu Fang nofaces.tumblr.com.
4,000.
But actually, we're like just clearly much better at news than anyone else right now, so you should follow us. And it seems like every Saturday night around midnight, we'll have the new clip as soon as it goes up. It seems like Nick is automating the clip process again, so we'll just get a preview clips. It's like Friday night, right? So it's a Friday night, technically Saturday at midnight. And yes, that'll be tonight. That'll be fun. You can email us
at... I have to wake up in the morning.
Yeah, obviously.
As opposed to staying asleep forever, yes, that means you have to wake up in the morning.
You
yes.
can email us, Dylan, no. at dongwufang.net. At dongwufang is our Twitter, dongwufang Tumblr. You can post on the forums, give us comments at dongwufang.net/forums. Thanks for... We made 200 iTunes ratings. Thank you, guys. Someone reviewed us, and it was this really weird review where they are mad at us for not being harsher about the Last Airbender movie, except for the fact that that was 4 years ago. So
it was 4 years
Wait,
ago when we were trying to be
what
hopeful.
What Last Airbender movie?
Yeah, well, exactly. It's really interesting
what?
If you go back.
Shut up, okay?
If you go back and listen to that podcast, me and Mel talked about it the morning after we saw it, like the day after it came out. So it's
I
really weird to listen to our. Our reactions because we're both negative, but we're not that negative, so
yeah.
It's interesting. I think I did say it was the worst movie I've ever seen, which is still true. So, props to me for identifying.
You have not seen that. Well, no, The Room is enjoyable.
So
The Room is so bad that it's good.
If
so.
You have these guys' Tumblrs are linked and that's from the post on the Dongwu Fang Tumblr about this podcast, which you might be listening from. You might be listening from iTunes. I don't know. If you have questions for me, you can ask me at dylanftsw.tumblr.com. And you can send an ask there, and then it probably appears in my blog if you don't know how Tumblr works and stuff like that. And
if you know how Tumblr
if
works.
If you don't, I said, know how Tumblr works. I don't know. Some people don't.
If you
Tumblr.
Don't, how did you get here?
Many people
iTunes.
Listen on iTunes, yeah.
Yeah,
iTunes. Send
like
us,
how?
You can send us feedback before episodes start. Next week is The Calling. And
started out as a Oh my God.
That is
The Call by Regina Spektor.
That is featured at the end of the second Narnia movie.
Yes, it is.
Yep. Boom.
Boom.
And yeah, and you can next week theoretically Jenora will talk, so we'll be very excited about that. Okay. What are we gonna end on?
Oh,
smoothies
go
or
woo.
I stepped up.
Go woo.
Those are dumb. I do like, go woo.
I stepped up.
Like, because that quote, I thought the quote was so great.
Step
so
up, featuring
I thought
Kubira.
It was
stupid.
What did we say?
Go woo.
Go woo. I like
no.
go woo.
But in the way they said it, so.
No.
Go woo.
I mean, it is appropriate because he was so good this episode. Okay. Thanks for listening, guys. Send me feedback and stuff. Don't
wait,
forget
what
forums.
Are we
doing? One, two, three.
Allie, you,
go
you
woo.
Just...
woo.
Go woo.
Wow. Let's try that
go
again.
Woo.
One, two, three. Go woo.
Go woo.
Okay, that was better.
Oh my God.